This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Well, beyond the sea, somewhere waiting for me, my lover stands on golden sands and watches the ship that goes sailing.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. It's a special edition of Sellers Points Podcast right here on Place to Be Nation Pop. That's right. We have our own network now for all this comic book shenanigans. Isn't it great? I think it's great. And I'm pretty excited about us having our own little space. But at the same time, you know, it's just going to be more of the usual craziness that you've gotten used to with all of us here. And speaking of which, I've got not one, but two guests on the podcast this time. That's right. I'm taking two at once because that's just how I roll. And I'm not afraid, not scared. That was terrible. I'm never doing that again. But anyway, first up, the first guest I've got with me today is somebody, both of these guys have never been on the show before, but this first guy I'm pretty excited about because he's got such a huge back catalog knowledge of anything and everything comics. I mean, this guy's like a walking archive. And for the purposes of this podcast, he is also an experienced sea captain, because this is going to be our Aquaman show, folks. So I hope you're ready. And I know that Mr. Todd Weber, you're ready, aren't you, sir?
Here's to swimming with bow-legged women.
Oh, that's proper.
Show me the way, to go.
Bum,
bum, bum. Sorry.
And in case you haven't figured it out yet, the drinking started well before we got to the recording part. So, and that's just going to continue throughout. So apologies for any drunken insanity that you're going to hear, but we're really not sorry. And also with us on the podcast, one of the other biggest Aquaman fans I know, and the other half of the Hard Traveling Fanboys, making his debut on this program, ornery sea captain in training, Mr. Nick Duke.
I don't think I'll be very ornery tonight, because this will have special significance to you guys. For the first time since WrestleMania 32, today I went to my liquor cabinet and I pulled out that famous bottle of Black Grouse that got me in so much trouble, and I popped that cork today. So that's what I'm enjoying at the moment.
Knock them back, sir. That's what they're there for.
I am honored that you only drink from that bottle when I am involved.
That's true. I literally haven't drank from the bottle since then. Although from what I understand, my escapades have gained, you know, some sort of acclaim on the internet. So there you are.
We'll call it notoriety.
Notoriety. Yeah.
It sounds more prestigious.
As J. Jonah Jameson said in the first Spider-Man movie, "You want to be famous? I'll make him infamous."
And thus he was. But luckily, there are no unicorn horns stabbing innocent bystanders involved in this one yet. But the night is young. And with that, this is a special edition of the Sellers Points podcast, because normally we'd be covering a wide variety of topics, but this time we decided to do something a little different and dedicate the entire episode to one particular character, and that is the true king of Atlantis, not the Kmart Speedo-wearing knockoff, who shall henceforth be left nameless. But this is
Namor-less, yes.
This is all about Aquaman. And, you know, guys, before we get into the big Aquaman talk, Nick and I just watched the Injustice 2 trailer, the full-length one, gameplay trailer that just dropped today. And I got to say, that Aquaman footage from that was pretty badass. Nick, what was your take on that?
Well, the Aquaman stuff from Injustice 1 was awesome. So I was more excited about seeing Black Manta confirmed as a playable character, honestly. That was one thing I thought was missing a little bit, was a more varied selection of villains in the first game. You know, kind of having somebody to represent every character. So in this one, we already know now that we've got another Green Lantern villain because they confirmed Atrocitus. They also confirmed Gorilla Grodd, so we got another Flash villain and Black Manta as the only Aquaman villain that I can recall anyway to date in the Injustice universe from a playable character standpoint. So very excited that that they seem to be expanding the roster, which is my big thing I want from this game. Like, honestly, keep the gameplay the exact same way it was. Give us another story mode pretty similar to the first one, and just blow the roster up, and I'm good with this.
Oh, absolutely. And like, speaking of like, other new characters that they brought in, the Supergirl footage looked pretty awesome. I was wondering if they were going to really like be able to make her seem very different from Superman's attack patterns, but what we saw in the trailer looks like she's got her own thing going on, and it's going to be awesome to play as her and to play as Atrocitus, who also had Dex Star with him.
Right.
And I'm pretty excited about Rage Kitty, probably more excited than I should be, but I've always found him to be, like, I don't know, just cute and destructive whenever he appeared in the comics, and that was he was always a source of, you know, excitement and very good humor. But that's our take. I know, Todd, you didn't get a chance to see it, but you're also an Injustice player, yes?
Yes, I played the first one. I had it actually on the 360, and my wife said, "What are you doing? That's way too violent for our kids." And she was right. I played it a little bit, and they went nuts. But this was, you know, 3 or 4 years ago when that game was new. And
God,
you're
making me feel like a bad parent, because I'm pretty sure my kids watched, like, 3 hours of People versus OJ today in the middle of the day, but that's neither here nor there.
Well, you know, I really can't say anything as the childless one in the group, but at the same time, hey, Todd, they're a little bit older now, so you can get away with it this time.
I do believe so, and I've got a Xbox One now, so I'm looking forward to it. Aquaman was probably my favorite person to play on the original Injustice, even though, you know, getting that – was it a whale attack that he had? His special was the whale would come through and –
I thought it was sharks, right?
Yeah.
Was it sharks? Like, okay.
I think it was sharks, yeah.
Either way, it was a whale of a good time.
His trident attack as a special attack, not his, like, finishing move or whatever.
Right,
but that
right.
trident to the gut was always, like, a pretty cool move that you could pull off at any given moment. So I think Aquaman – was probably my favorite character to play as well. He and the Flash, I think, were my two favorites, just because I'm not very good at fighting games, so I always look for the ones that I can find cheap moves to spam over and over again, and those were the two that it was easiest to do that with.
Oh, and Flash was definitely the go-to. He was the guy that they made easiest to learn very quickly and, you know, just dash back and forth across the screen and just keep people juggled in the air and you'll win.
But even that was toned down a lot from Mortal Kombat versus DC, because in that game, if you got Flash on a roll, he was pretty much unbeatable. Like, if you started stringing off a combo, you were going to have to be playing somebody who was really freaking good at the game for them to ever break your combo.
And I vaguely remember that game. I only played it, like, maybe once or twice, but Injustice, I got, like, obsessively into it, and it was one
let's
of the,
just hope let's hope that story mode is just as good on the new version.
That's my concern too, is that I really hope that they've gotten a really good story written for this one, because it's one of those few games that I don't know if you guys read the comic tie-in to it.
Tom, what was his name? Tom Taylor. Tom Taylor, there it is.
Yeah, that comic tie-in is absolutely fantastic.
I've only read a couple issues, but the Harley Quinn Green Arrow one was hilarious and one of my favorite Green Arrow things I've ever read. So,
and that keeps going for a while.
That universe is still going.
Year five of that story, right?
For a tie-in, that's pretty great.
Yeah, they are, and they're actually about to wind up ending this current version. I think it's going to end with year five, and they're going to move. I hope that if the story mode of Injustice 2 is just as good, that they'll get somebody, like, maybe get Tom back and keep it going, you know, launch a new version.
My impression is that Tom's star has risen so much as a result of that comic that he's probably going to get tasked to go on and do bigger and better things. Like, you know, he got Edge of Oblivion, the last Green Lantern Corps miniseries. So hopefully he's got some bigger things, you know, coming up. But I definitely think there should be some sort of tie-in comic, even if it isn't Tom, you know, doing it over again.
Oh, absolutely. And I just finished Edge of Oblivion last night, and it ends kind of like how you'd expect. If you read Green Lantern's Rebirth, you kind of know where this is going. And, You know, he is probably the biggest Superman fan that I've ever seen on Twitter, other than people who run like the like fake Superman accounts or whatever. And I would be very happy if he got a chance to jump on some actual Superman comics at some point in the near future. I think he would be a really good fit there, just because he seems to have such a passion for the character. But speaking of passion for characters, let's get over to getting Nick on a bit of a rant, or at least I'm going to attempt it, and talk about the big issue that came out this week, and that was DC Aquaman Rebirth number 1. And as I understand it, Nick, this was your pick for Book of the Week.
This is my pick for Book of DC Rebirth thus far, as long as we're not including, obviously, the 80-page DC Universe
right.
Rebirth number 1. But sure. Of the solo Rebirth titles, this is my pick. Had pretty much everything I want out of an Aquaman book, a heavy focus on Mira, you know, and a willingness. The important thing for me, not being a lifelong Aquaman fan, is you've got to have a willingness to at least poke fun at yourself in a way to depower all the people who are going to mock Aquaman as a concept anyway. Mm. Kind of like how in issue 1 of Aquaman, when the New 52 started, in that diner scene, Geoff Johns pretty much pulled out every insult that people have been hurling Aquaman's way for years and addressed them all in the span of, like, what, 3 pages? And so he had addressed them all up front and moved past it. And so in Aquaman Rebirth, you have this great line where the narrator of the piece, who turns out, spoilers, to be Black Manta.
Spoiler.
Yeah, spoilers, to be Black Manta. He actually mentions the land people think he can talk to fish. For some people, for some reason, they have a bizarre fascination with his ability to talk to fish. I do not know why. And that line alone pretty much sold me on the whole
thing.
Then by the end, when you get the reveal of Manta's like motivation going forward and his realization of what the true key to Aquaman as a character is, that pretty much sold me on the whole series going forward, as I knew it would. This is, you know, I'm not as long time an Aquaman fan as Todd is. So what I look for is pretty much what I call the Geoff Johns approach. And as I've said on Hard Traveling Fanboys, this is the closest we've gotten to the Geoff Johns approach since Geoff Johns, in my opinion.
I'd agree with that. Between like you and Todd had an effect on me, because as you guys know, I tried the Cullen Bunn run, and we're going to talk a little bit more about that later, but it lost me after about two, three issues, and I wasn't sure I really wanted to come back when Dan Abnett took over, but I was looking at the conversation that you two guys were having on Twitter about Aquaman 49 and then subsequently Aquaman 50 and 51. I was like, okay, fair enough. I'm going to go. And on Free Comic Book Day, I was in Dothan at Fanatics. There's a plug, Phil. I decided that since I wasn't like really interested in getting any of the free comics that day, I would look and see if he had any Aquaman back issues that I might jump in. And he had 49. So I bought it that day, went to Greg's apartment, sat down, read it, and I was like, I will be damned if this isn't right back to where we were. I sought out 50 and paid $10 for it on eBay.
Wow.
Yeah, that's how bad I wanted to get it. But, I mean, that's with shipping and everything.
Right.
It was just...
We've all done that.
Yeah, it was a task. I was like, I am not missing this. I'm going to get 50, and then I'm going to... luckily, my comic shop here, Capital City Comics, was able to get me 51. And I was right there with you guys. I read through that. 52 was amazing. And, yeah, this is, like, back to form. I was like, I'm fully invested back in...
Don't feel bad, Russell. I once dropped a couple $100s on books that I never actually got. So, you know, that's the way that goes.
We hear this story every time Nick and I are on
it. Yeah, it's still like somewhere there's an incinerator at a postal service that incinerated my Ultimate Spider-Man number 1 that still just like bothers me to this day.
I threw in all these bonus books for you, too.
He did. He threw in Ultimate 6 and
the
others, I'm trying to remember. A couple annuals, I believe, that I was missing.
That
Marvel Team Up. Yeah, I tried Ultimate.
Yeah, the whole run.
Yep.
That
the post office.
Yes, that.
Sorry.
Father's employer.
That is heartbreaking. I had actually forgotten about that story, but I know that this is gonna that's gonna be one that Nick will never forget and never forgive. That's on the post office, and they're on notice now.
Especially because it's gonna cost me so much to ever go back and rebuild that run whenever I decide to do that.
Jeez, and man,
because number one alone runs about 125 for a decent copy.
It does, yeah. Yes, I'm sorry, man.
No, it's not your fault. You don't work for the post office, or do you?
I'm not Josh Richard. Wait, no.
Somebody. Josh Richard works for the post office? Somebody?
Well, I think it's his buddy, Richard the Mailman. There it is.
Oh.
Place to be nation.
Bastards.
And
we're off topic. Sorry.
Yes, but it's okay because that's what happens whenever we're all like drinking and talking about comics. We just go all over the place. But Todd, did you get a chance to read Aquaman Rebirth?
Let's talk about Aquaman Rebirth.
Yeah, tell me your perspective on it.
First thing, I mean, the story was great, but the first thing I noticed was the first two or three pages just had amazing art, unbelievable art, and it was kind of a jarring thing when you turn the page and the art simplified quite a bit to a different artist. And I don't know whether it was Jimenez, not Phil Jimenez, but Oscar Jimenez, or the other artist who was listed whose name I don't have, but
Scott Eaton.
So there we go. So the bookends of the book were fantastic art wise. And then the meat of it was kind of meh, but I mean, it was functional. It just was pretty plain, kind of in a Joe Staton kind of way. Right. But the story wise, I was reading it and like, you get all these callbacks back to Aquaman 1, the Jeff Johns Aquaman New 52 one. And I felt just like, this is great. Abnett's just got this. He owns this character now. And the only complaint I was having going on with it was this narration's kind of dry. What's going on? I mean, usually you have an omniscient narrator. And I didn't think that it could be a third person or a different character doing the narration. So it was pretty great reveal that Aquaman's arch nemesis is really going to have his moment here, his storyline here at the end of the book. So yeah, big thumbs up. I think it's just a notch below Green Arrow, which was just such a restoration to me that, you know, as far as all the Rebirth books, which have been great across the board. I'm still waiting to read the Action Comics and the Detective Comics, but all the actual Rebirth one-shots have been top-notch. With the exception of maybe Flash, which was okay, but still neat enough that it had the Flash and Batman detective stuff going on. And the Wally and Flash after postlude to DCU Rebirth. So, yeah.
We'll call
Aquaman
that,
Rebirth, very, very good.
We'll call that the DC Afterbirth.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm with you on Flash. It was a good enough book. It was a good enough like premise that they've got going that I'll probably stick around with it for a little while, see how it plays out. But for me, like Detective Comics has just that just blew me away.
I can't wait to read it. And you guys have influenced me to pick up those books, Detective Comics and Action Comics, at least for these introductions to the new status quo.
And I think that as a DC fan from way back, I think you're going to be more than satisfied. And I said it on Facebook in a couple of groups that Detective Comics is as close as I've ever seen a comic book actually getting the tone and atmosphere of Batman the Animated Series.
Mostly agree with that. Yeah,
it was right on, and I couldn't get enough of it. I read it twice, like back to back, because it was just that good. Action Comics was right there with it, like nipping at its heels. But I was also like right there with Aquaman Rebirth. I thought that it. I'm with you, Todd. That it's incredibly good, and with only like that middle section of the art being kind of serviceable, not bad in any way. Just it didn't pop like the beginning and the end of the book did,
right?
Because those sections were just on fire, perfectly done. And I love the my favorite scene of the book is actually the quietest scene in there is when Aquaman and Mira are sitting in the restaurant
back at the diner. Sam's.
Back at Sam's seafood restaurant, and and Cindy is their waitress, who was also Aquaman's waitress in
number one.
Yep. And like it was a really cool callback to you know, that that little interaction they had when he throws her a few what looks like doubloons, if you will. And he's like, she's like, what am I supposed to do with these? And he looks back at her and says, you know, put your kids through college.
And, you know, look how at peace he is, or how chill he is here, and how kind of annoyed he was, at least that first Aquaman one. So that's kind of cool. And I think the difference is Mera, you know, if you look at the progression of the character post New 52.
Right. It really is. Nick, we've had this conversation a couple of times, but I think it bears repeating that both – well, I will say that three writers between Jeff Johns, Jeff Parker, and now Dan Abnett, Mera is not his sidekick. She's not a supporting character. She is the co-lead of the book.
Yeah, I totally agree. Even to the point that in Abnett's run, you know, towards the end of the New 52 – when he had her formally take on the Aquawoman mantle, she was actually – like, they wrote it in a way that Mera as a character made fun of the name, which actually just sold me on that whole deal happening. So, yeah, I mean, this has been – everything he's done with Mera thus far has been fantastic. And it just reminds me of how bold it was of Jeff Johns to pretty much ignore the no marriage thing. And I assume that he wrote Aquaman – number one, you know, at the beginning of the New 52, as if the characters were still married, knowing he was always going to come back to this as soon as he could.
Oh, yeah. And that's been my favorite part of this whole, like, ever since Jeff Johns started on it, was he took Mera and built on kind of what he started to do with when Aquaman was resurrected back in Brightest Day.
Brightest Day.
And that was to build her up as his co-lead, as like his equal, not as a sidekick and not as like, I hate to say it in a derogatory sense like this, but Mera is not Lois Lane.
She doesn't need protecting, is what you're saying.
No, she doesn't. She absolutely doesn't. I mean, to many degrees, Lois doesn't either, but in this sense, when you see Mera's power set, when she's controlling water and like she's adding that to what Aquaman can already do on his own, you get this really great complementary couple who, like, together you can tell that this is how they're meant to be. This is when they're at their strongest, because I mean they're strong individually, but together they're like a force of nature. And that is something that I've really appreciated about Johns, Parker, and Abnett's run so far. And but you know, I've noticed online that there are a lot of people who are kind of down on the Jeff Parker run. Nick, what was your take on Jeff Parker's time whenever he took over for Johns?
Well, I mean, Greg and I have talked about this on Hard Traveling, you know, a couple times with various other creators. The saying is, you never want to be the guy that follows the guy.
Yeah.
And a prime example of that, also involving Jeff Johns, is Robert Venditti right now. Like, you don't want to be that first writer who has to follow the iconic run, because, I mean, you know, Todd can talk about it, but we obviously have, you know, the Peter David run in the 90s and stuff. But really, for Aquaman to a modern audience, Jeff Johns kind of redefined that character.
Absolutely.
And so it's always tough to pick up that baton and run with it whenever it's been, you know, risen to, you know, or carried to such a high level. And so I found Jeff Parker's run, I thought it was a pretty good run. I thought it was pretty good superhero comics. Was it revolutionary in any way? Was it, you know, something I would have considered the best book of the month, you know, whenever I was reading it? No. But, I mean, it was never anything that made me consider dropping the character from my pull list. I'll put it that way.
I'm right there with you. I never thought – when Jeff Parker took over, I was like, I'm totally in. I mean, he kept Paul Pelletier as his artist throughout his run as well, and that was – the book still looked exactly the same, and to me it felt the same. I mean, it wasn't as – I guess it wasn't as Johns-esque when Parker was writing it, but once he found his footing after that first story arc – I felt like, you know, this is still a high quality book. He's got something going on here, and I am very curious to see where he goes with it. All of that was during the time that I was really thinking we were actually leading up to Rise of the Seven Seas, which still hasn't happened, but supposedly that's what we're on the road to now.
And that is, I guess that's the rumors, that that's when Johns will come back, or the next thing that he will actually get his feet wet with. I don't know.
Proper fun.
Yeah, I liked the Jeff Parker run too. I liked that he didn't focus too much on Atlantis, which is kind of my pet peeve, but the things I prefer when you have Arthur and Mera out there just adventuring, out there like getting into shit instead of hanging out and having to deal with Atlantean politics and uprisings and things like that. And you're always going to have that as part of the book. I like the way he characterized Volko too. Actually, that was more of a progression from John's and those internal politics of Atlantis and the different factions and what have you. But I liked Parker. It was definitely kind of almost a little bit more old school too. That which is his specialty. If you read some of Parker's other stuff, he really specializes in these old properties and making them a little bit more relevant.
He wrote a ton of Batman 66 when it first got off the ground. So,
and currently he's doing Future Quest.
Go ahead.
Exactly.
Space Ghost and Herculoids and all that. And so that's his wheelhouse to me. So Aquaman dates back to the Golden Age, and he had a Filmation cartoon in the 60s that actually had Mera. I didn't know that. I didn't know that she goes all the way back to the early days of the Aquaman solo book. I guess I didn't assume that she would be part of the cartoons back then, too, because she wasn't on Super Friends in the 70s. But she was on the Filmation cartoons with him and Aqualad, too, in the 60s. So,
nice.
Jeff Parker did a good job, but the wheels fell off at issue 41.
Oh, we're going to let's get into that before we start talking about some of the classic stuff. Because as some people know, when Cullen Bunn took over Aquaman at issue 41, the infamous 41, things were a bit different than they had been under Jeff Parker. Suddenly, Aquaman is on the outs with all of Atlantis, including, it appeared, Mera. And it looked like they had, people like Garth and other members of the Atlantean house, hunting him down like he was a criminal because he chose to help people from an alternate universe. And it was – that was one thing, but I don't know. There were a lot of implications in there, like hinted at heel turn from Mera, which of course turned out to be an imposter, but
evil twin.
The whole like
imposter Siren thing. Is that her name? No,
yeah, Siren. Yeah.
Yeah, it was Siren. Yeah. And, the Aquaman has, I guess unintentional sex with Siren scene. All of this was stuff that turned me off to the book, but at the same time, I wasn't like so angry about it that, I sent angry tweets to Cullen Bunn and threatened his life like some folks did. And that was insane. Did you guys see any of that while it was going on?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was kind of weird. Like, I'll agree that of the new 52 Aquaman runs, Cullen Bunn's would be at the bottom. But I didn't find it offensive in any way. You know, I didn't find – did I – I didn't love it, but I didn't hate it. Like it just left me with a feeling of overwhelmingly average is the best way I can put it. Nothing to write home about.
The art was terrible. At least, and it was inconsistent. Didn't do it any favors.
Right. And then I remember whenever they did the Siren reveal, there were, various groups of fandom. And I remember columns coming out about how it was – a sexist storyline to have a female villain use sex over a hero. And I was like, have you read comics for the last, 60 years? That's been happening. You know, it didn't make any sense to me, the level of outcry it got. Was it a great book? No, but I didn't understand the massive backlash it got. I'll put it that way.
What I would maybe hypothesize is that there was an editorial mandate to make him bring him more in line with the Jason Momoa characterization and where the DCU films are going. And so I think people really lashed out about that because it felt forced instead of organic, in my opinion. And they really went for it with the different costume and, getting him starting, not just visually, but maybe acting a little bit more bestial and not so much cerebral, which is the Aquaman we know.
I don't know about the DC, about the film tie-in, but my assumption was that as a part of DCU, which was launching around the same time, and you had major status quo shifts for all the other characters, they pretty much forced Bunn's hand into doing a major status quo shift with Aquaman, even though it was a major status quo shift, like all the other characters you knew was only going to be a 9-10-issue, one-year thing.
We can call that DCYOU for clarification.
Yeah, Y-O-U.
So that's why Jim Gordon was Batman. What else happened that was a
T-shirt Superman?
There you go.
Hobo Hal Jordan.
hoodie Hobo Hal Jordan.
Long haired, not in any way like Hal Jordan. Hal Jordan. Aquaman and Mira splitting. I'm sure there are others that I'm missing.
I think I'd given up so much on most of the New 52 books by then. I wasn't following anything but Batman and Justice League at that point. I mean, I'm still buying Aquaman as a habit, but you know, I didn't even think about it being part of DCYOU.
At least we still had, you know, Justice League of America launched around that time, and it still felt like the beginning of the New 52, like all the characterizations in there were what we remembered, and it didn't feel like a huge departure, but everything else really did.
Well, and Justice League pretty much ignored all of that. It never, you know.
Yeah, Justice League continued doing its own thing. I mean, that was right about the time, that was when Darkseid War began.
Right. And
so it was totally unconcerned with the DCYOU movement.
It gave no fucks.
It gave zero. There were none to give. Jeff Johns was like, you know what? Y'all play with that for a little while. I'm going to go over here and I'm going to set up this whole thing, and I'll be back to help you put all this back together in a good way once you've figured out that all of this isn't going to really work for you.
And what's great is, like, 3 years from now, if you're ever missing the New 52, when Justice League of America finally ships its last three issues, you'll get a little taste of that.
Oh, sorry, Brian Hitch, but we had to get that little dig in there. You're taking forever.
Yeah, that's the only thing that I, you know, they've gotten the core titles so much aligned, so much, I don't know, they righted in the past couple of weeks that now JLA is the clusterfuck. That what are they going to do? You know?
I caught a tweet from Brian Hitch last night where he said that issue 10 was the only one that he hadn't finished penciling, but was about to finish it like that day. But like 9, 11, and 12 were completely done.
So full of shit.
Yeah. I mean, he says that, and I'm like, all right, well, when can we expect all of them to come out at the exact same time? Because that would be nice.
Yeah.
Just drop the whole thing. Drop it as like a, you know, and drop the price. Like, drop it down to a $2.99 book. That would be nice. Like, fall in line with Rebirth.
Just put out the trade already, you know?
Yeah, you might as well. Like, if they're just going to cancel it like that, just put it all out as one big trade collection and, you know, get on with it. Which is why I'm glad that he's not drawing Justice League. It's Tony Daniel taking lead on that one. And he's a guy who does quality and can do it on time.
He is consistent and timely. He, as he showed with both, he was doing two books at a time for a while. So I have no worries about that.
None.
On Hitch's writing, I don't know. I mean, the Rao storyline has been okay, but I've haven't been able to track it very well since it's been so sporadic. So I don't know. I don't know if Hitch can bring the goods as far as the writing goes with a different artist. Does he just have an exclusive contract to fulfill, or what's up?
I think he is exclusive with DC, but the whole like writing and drawing your own books, I think that was an experiment to see if he could really handle it, and we've clearly seen the result of that. But his writing has, you know, I think it's been pretty good. I really enjoy JLA. I just wish that it would have come out on time, and I think it would have been far more enjoyable for Todd. I think you would have liked it a lot more if it was like an actual month-to-month book. It would have felt more cohesive. And
those first 3-4 issues were great. Really were, you know, and a lot of fun. But then with the delays and then the fill-in issues, so like, why would I bother with this? I'm just going to wait till it's all out now.
Yeah, that fill-in with Martian Manhunter was exceptionally weird. Like, it didn't really make sense why you would even publish that with the JLA title strapped across the front of it.
It didn't. It was basically like a fill-in portion. It was like something they were using to try and maybe drum up sales for their Martian Manhunter solo title, which has floundered, and he's not getting a new solo title in Rebirth.
Doesn't deserve one, a filthy green Martian.
I know they've announced plans to do the same thing with Justice League 51 and 52, but I kind of hope they don't. I kind of hope those books just never ship.
51 is coming out. I think it's coming out this week.
Yeah, I know. But, I mean, it just – what's the point? You know, like,
what's the point?
It's a Dan – I know this one, first one is supposed to be a Dan Abnett penned issue, and it's setting up a storyline in Titans. So that's that one's got my interest because it's also a story that's being told in the past when like Batman first brought Dick Grayson to meet the Justice League. And supposedly that's all supposed to like lead into his opening story arc for Titans. Like the overarching story of that is somehow tied to it. 52 is done by Dan Jurgens and is going to tie into Action Comics. It's going to tell the story of why Lex Luthor bothered to come back to Earth after he was named, you know, new Emperor King, whatever of Apocalypse. So it's like, why would he come back to Earth? And Dan was like, oh, well, I'm going to tell that story in Justice League 52.
Man, Russell, you come prepared, man. Nice.
I've really been looking forward to both of those issues, although I was like, you know, it would have been nice if those had just like run in, like, or especially the Dan Jurgens issue, if that had just been part of Action Comics. But if it's in Justice League, okay, fine. I'll buy it anyway.
An OCD thing on DC's part? No, they must get to 52.
I think that's what it is, yeah.
That's really what it is they wanted to do that. And I mean, Justice League 50 was basically double-sized.
Where do you go from there, you know?
It's like Johns is done. Like, this is it. So there's nothing left for him to say. And that's fine. You know, if he's done there, that's cool. But I think that people would have forgiven them for not going to 52 with Justice League if they really didn't want to.
Especially because it's been delayed by so many, like, the last couple issues have hit, you know, 2 or 3 week delays every time.
Yeah, that's been frustrating. That was frustrating during Darkseid War when issues would undergo those delays. And, I mean, I can understand it to a degree because Jason Fabok's art was just so detailed. And I was thinking, man, I know this guy works pretty fast, but how fast is he really?
Yeah, it's weird because he was fast enough to be consistent on the Batman Forever. Eternal. There it is. That was the word I was grasping for on the first one. And so he got the job based on his consistency for that. But, you know, the Darkseid War was pretty epic, I suppose.
He had, I think it was just like the sheer scope of it and cast of characters and how different they all were from each other. But trying to draw all of that in like these single issues was a pretty daunting task. But credit to him, amazing job. And Darkseid War, I would put right up there with Geoff Johns' absolute best. That's just some of the best work he's ever done, and probably ever will do.
Yeah, to me, it is almost to the level of the Sinestro Corps War, which to me is the other pinnacle. So you know, it's a great way to walk away from it. And if you look at that 1 through 50 of Justice League, did he do the entire thing plus some of the other Justice League titles too?
He did.
I mean, that's great.
He's got quite a tenure on Justice League. Some of the best comics that he's ever written. And I mean, I'll admit that the first story arc he did with Jim Lee, like, that started off a little, I guess, surface is the way that I would say it was a little shallow in terms of depth of story and feel. But by that second arc, I could, you know, it felt like he was finding his footing, and then he just kind of took off like a
Throne
rock.
Of Atlantis was
yeah,
right after
Throne
that.
Of Atlantis. Yeah,
Throne of Atlantis hits, and we're back to Aquaman because Throne of Atlantis took off, and up to now I was saying that was his absolute best Justice League story. That was like a great Justice League story, and for my money, that's the best Aquaman story that's been written.
Yeah, without a doubt. I think the whole arc, and you know, we have the tie-in movie too. So to have two different trades. You have an Aquaman trade for Throne of Atlantis and a JLA trade for it. And you got to see really Ocean Master be written to his ultimate potential, in my opinion. So I think that was the pinnacle of what we've seen from Aquaman so far. And it was a great place for Geoff Johns to bail, too. It's like, where do I go from here as a writer? He got what he wanted out of the character. And so, you know, it was nice that he was able to get that much out of Aquaman. Plus, we had the spinoff title that came off just before that, too, The Others, right?
Yeah, there was an Aquaman and The Others title that was by Dan Jurgens. I think it was Dan Jurgens who was handling that.
It was, yeah. Writing, not art.
Yeah, he wasn't doing the art. honestly, that book, it spun out of a really good story, but it just didn't wow me. It didn't hold my attention.
I never read any of it just because I had so much on my pull list at the time. I couldn't find the cash or justify spending the additional money every month to buy it. So still haven't read it. I want to go back and read it at some point, but yeah.
Man, you might get more out of it than I did, but it just it didn't really work for me as a title. And I really wanted it to, because the others I thought was a fantastic Aquaman story. And
right, that second arc of Aquaman was really good, and where John's introduced the whole others team. So
yeah,
it was cool that they.
But like, speaking of classic Aquaman stories, Todd, you have a longer history with the character than Nick or I do. How would you say the character of Aquaman today compares, or like just? How is he different, or how is he alike to the character, say, when he was written by Peter David, who had a long tenure with the character?
Yeah, okay. So let's look at Peter David, which was early 90s, mid-90s. And it did kind of intentionally harden him, not extreme-wise or image comics-wise, but it did a little bit. You know, it made him a little bit more, not quite a street level justice character, but definitely a more savage character. But what was cool about the Peter David run is that it tied into the Atlantis Chronicles series that David had done in the mid 80s, which is fantastic. If you ever check that out, it's kind of a history of Atlantis from ancient times of Arion the Sorcerer all the way up to Aquaman times. And so the David run tied into that. But Aquaman himself, he was definitely kind of a loner in those books, and there wasn't much as far as his relationship with Mera. It was definitely still a kind of a throwback to when Aquaman and Mera lost their son in the mid 70s. Black Manta murdered their son, Arthur Jr.
And I just saw a trade collection of that today at a comic shop here.
You're finding some of the older Aquaman stories are now being collected for the first time in trades, which is great. You know, until we get DC Unlimited, that's what we have to do. We have to find these.
Oh my god! These,
and here
such
we
a
go.
No-brainer. I mean, we keep hitting this note every time because Marvel Unlimited is brilliant, and DC Unlimited has. I would love it even more. I'd pay up to twice as much.
Well, especially because you have a backlog that goes back to literally like 1929, a full 30 years of comics that would predate anything 30. On Marvel, and I'm like, I would easily pay, you know, $5 or more a month for that, but they don't seem interested in doing it. And I've theorized that part of it perhaps is, you know, their dedication to day-and-date digital. You know, they were the first ones with the advent of the New 52 to really, you know, throw their feet into the water full force with day-and-date, same day-and-date digital. And I wonder if maybe they're worried about cannibalization of digital sales or whatever it might be. But, I mean, when you sit there and you look at Marvel Unlimited, which is such a great product, and now Comixology Unlimited, you can't continue to lag behind the rest of the industry the way it looks like they're about to.
No.
They really can't.
No. The only time I end up buying a digital copy of a DC book is when it's either sold out or the anticipation is such that I don't want to get spoiled, which I did with Rebirth. I was able to buy it. Sorry, guys. Here we go. Little Orphan Annie and all that. I was able to buy.
Son of a bitch.
I'm sorry, man. But I mean, I didn't say anything. I posted the button. That's it. I own it. I didn't mean to spoil. I thought you guys had all read it by then. I make the mistake that everybody is at the same level of access that I am. And so I read it at midnight and I was just, fuck. Wow. Is this good? Is this bad? I don't know, but it's so great. I want to talk about it with somebody.
I understand.
Yeah,
you know, and
it wasn't a real anger. It was just a damn it kind of anger.
All I did, I put the button up, and then
I know
Steve said.
In fairness, like I was with Nick actually. I saw you put the button up, and I was like, I hadn't read the issue at the time, and I was like, I guess Todd is on a Watchmen kick right now. I don't know what hell that means.
That was my first thought. Yeah, and then like pretty much as soon as I saw Owlman get vaporized at the end of Justice League 50, I was like, wait a minute. And then I started putting everything together.
And it was like, God damn it, Todd.
It wasn't just Todd. It was also, like I said, I read – there was some clickbaity article that actually had gotten the last panel of Rebirth with Batman holding up the pin and had only blurred out the pin. And so I knew there was like a – like it had that about that size. and that kind of shape. And so in my head, when I saw it, I was like, oh, that's probably some kind of Two-Face reveal they're doing to retcon the supposed death of Two-Face in the only story arc he was featured in the New 52, which was a storyline in Batman and Robin. And so I kind of thought that's what that was. And then I didn't know it was going to be like the climactic moment of the book.
Well, that was a big moment. You know, that's one of the biggest moments in comics as far as I'm concerned. But there was an Aquaman moment in Rebirth that was, I don't know, it was just pitch perfect. It was an Aquaman moment as only Geoff Johns could have written it. And that was the marriage proposal to Mira. What was you guys' reaction to that whenever you read it? I know what mine was, but I want to hear what you guys thought whenever you read that.
Thank God, fuck Dan Didio.
Yep. Yeah, it's like, well, why were they ever not married? Why did we have to go through this whole courtship again? Because they're destined to be with each other. They're going to be together in the movies. Yeah. So, and Mira, to me, she's a star in one of the Bombshells books too. Have you checked that out? Is anybody reading that?
No, I'm not reading Bombshells.
I have. I read several issues of it, and it is very, very good.
Yeah, it's cool, and so it's nice to see her apart from that. And I mean, she's had stints where she's been parts of teams too, apart from Arthur. So, but yeah, that moment was like, okay, cool. But the thing I was more excited about is that we have the contemporary Aqualad coming.
Yes, Calderon is coming.
And so, you know, and which is great because, you know, we have three generations of the Black Manta family involved in Aquaman now. Right, because the reveal at the end. When did they reveal that Aquaman is responsible for the death of Manta's father? Was that the villains issue of New 52 where they had that?
I don't know. It wasn't in villains the villains. Month? It wasn't in the villains issue. It was in. It was actually in Aquaman.
I should know this better. It's all a blur.
I want to say that
he gets to be my age.
I want to say it was actually during the Others.
Yeah, I think during the Others they actually brought in
okay.
Manta.
And, yeah, I know he was in that story. Okay.
Yeah, I think that's what it was. And so you said a third generation. What's the third generation? Am I missing
one?
Isn't
it Calderon?
Oh, because they haven't. Okay, they haven't even gone there
spoiler
yet.
Spoiler warning.
I mean, if they go the Young Justice route,
they should.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they should, but I mean, like, it's not for certain that they will.
It's not contemporary DCU canon that he is, but if they're introducing the character.
Yeah, you're right. They totally should. Yeah.
I mean, it to me, it's a no brainer.
Yeah.
But which is, it's so ripe for storytelling and interesting twists in the next few years. So yeah, to me that is.
Well, the reveal of Calderon was one that I didn't see coming. Like whenever they did that, I was like, is that really? Oh my God, it is.
Yeah, it didn't even register with me the first time I read the book. I had to read it twice before I picked up on that's who that was.
And that they made him a gay character. I thought that was a really interesting twist.
He likes dudes, and that's okay with me.
Yeah, I was like, that's actually makes a lot of sense for Calderon. And now, when I go back and watch Young Justice now, I'm like, you know what? This actually makes a lot of sense.
Young Justice, he did pine after
Lagoon Boy. No,
not Lagoon Boy. Oh, damn it. The chick that Garth wound up stealing from him.
Yeah.
Artemis?
Not Artemis. No, the Atlantean chick.
No, it was in Atlantis.
They did a comeback issue. An episode where he returned to Atlantis and was expecting to reunite with his love, and it turned out that she had shacked up with Garth while he was gone.
Was it Tula?
Yes. Tula, yes.
There we go. Okay, cool. I know this stuff. I do.
But yeah, but beyond that, I thought that it made a lot of sense for him to be a leading man type character, but also be gay, and that really fits for him. Now, what I'm really wondering is that since Black Manta is going to play such a prominent role in this upcoming Aquaman arc, will we be seeing Calderon introduced there? And you know, how's that going to play out? You know, how's the father son dynamic going to work there?
Because Garth is in Titans, right?
Yes.
Garth is in Titans, yeah.
So it's Garth like we have three generations, right? We have three generations of these characters now.
And I think it's possible down the road, because Ben Percy has said on Twitter that there is an as-yet-unrevealed member of Teen Titans that is coming. So That
probably
can be
a legacy
any of
Arrow character, Thea, or something like that.
My personal hope is that it's Amico, simply because then he can do the Amico Damian Wayne, and retroactively, because that would be the only one of our pitches from the fantasy draft that got directly lifted, that would automatically make me the winner. So we'll just do that. But
he's determined.
If it's not Amico, it could easily be, I would think Calderon would make a lot of sense there.
I'm actually hoping for Calderon, because I'm really hoping that what they'll do is they'll do the Young Justice lineup in Teen Titans, like the TV show Young
plus
Justice.
Damian, of course.
Plus Damian. I'm kind of hoping they do the Justice League versus Teen Titans idea and have like Starfire there as like a trainer or something. But I've been hearing some chatter that it's actually going to be like the Titans characters are kind of acting as surrogates for the members of the Teen Titans, which would make a lot of sense.
Yeah, I mean, if you call Titans and Teen Titans at the same time, it gets tough for the average comic buyer. I think you need to have that third generation be titled something else. Young Justice was perfect. I mean, we had Impulse and we had Connor and we had Tim Drake, and those guys are all kind of where are they? They're not in the ether, but they're irrelevant for the most part. So now you have this new generation with John Kent and Damian and the other Wally, and now Calderon. I mean, you could have a new Young Justice team. We just have to call it something different, in my opinion.
I think they're also keeping Beast Boy as a younger character and going to have him on teen instead of...
He is forever 12 years old.
Oh, poor Beast Boy. You're never going to age.
Goes back to the late 60s in Doom Patrol, and he's still freaking 12 years old, man.
He can't grow up. They just won't.
He can't be Beast Man. That would just be dumb, Todd.
It's not easy being green.
Nah, he can't be a He-Man character. Sorry, buddy. But, yeah, there's a reference for you. And... But Todd, are there any other like classic Aquaman runs that you can think of besides the Peter David in the 90s? Like, what's the one that sticks out in your mind besides Peter David?
Well, there's lots. They're even predating Peter David. Oh, my dog is barking. I'm outside right now in my palatial garden estate here in Fair Oaks, California. But
recording on his iPad Pro, of course.
Shush! I didn't say it. You said it. So if we go back pre Peter David Aquaman, even pre Neil Posner, Craig Hamilton Aquaman, which I'm going to talk about in a second. You had Jim Aparo and Steve Skeets writing Aquaman and Aparo doing the art. And these classic stories of Arthur and Mara and Arthur Jr. and Black Manta, they were comics that were maybe 5-6 pages long in the section of adventure comics or backups of action comics. And they were great Aquaman comics. I mean, they were of their time. They were definitely this kind of simplified pre-crisis storytelling, but they were still awesome. And I wasn't the biggest Aquaman fan until the maybe post-crisis, and which we'll get to in a second. But, you know, I think those hold up. And I have the Aquaman, not the archives. What do they call them? The Showcase, the DC Showcase.
The Showcase, the yeah.
Black and white phone books, all three of those. And I've read through those, and it's kind of cool because you
are definitely – those all black and white?
Yeah, they are. They're phone books. Yeah, they're cheap though. I mean, they're $10
with
discounts on eBay or you know, half price. What's that place? InStock Trades.
Yeah, because I've considered picking up the Green Lantern showcases at various points and never have.
Yeah, I mean, that's how I would prefer to read the Silver Age stuff, just because dropping too much money on it is the stories just aren't that significant to me. But it's nice to have. It's nice to know.
Well, it'd be really cool is if you had some sort of like online service where you could go and pay a monthly subscription.
Wouldn't that be great?
And like dig through the backlog at your own, you know,
in
at your
full
own
leisure. Color.
That'd be something else. It'd be wild.
Your access, you might say, would be unlimited.
Limited. Yeah. If only there were something like that for Marvel Comics.
Yeah, or any other publisher.
Yeah, I mean, what a brilliant idea! If we had the money and capital to do it, we should totally do that. That just makes all sense in the world.
Just because Warner Brothers is such a convoluted corporation. I mean, Disney is too, but Marvel, they've kind of like – Marvel's its own deal, you know? But DC and Warner Brothers have this very intertwined executive structure where things just don't get done timely. They just now, in the past 5 years, gotten the trades to where they make sense, you know?
That's a good point.
Yeah.
And so getting the catalog digitized and into this – thing where it's just such a no-brainer to me, because these comics aren't making money. They're just there, you know?
Exactly. You're not monetizing for example, let's say the 1968 issues of Detective Comics. Those aren't in print currently. You know what I mean? Like,
and yet you own scratch them, off so, of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like the WWE Network. You know, they're letting that be a draw for people to subscribe.
Right.
So. All right. So, yeah, I know. I keep getting on my soapbox here.
But no, but DC, even their trades, away. You know, like you mentioned their trades getting on schedule. They're still not quite where they should be. I'll give you an example. Like, after reading Action Comics this week, it made me really interested in wanting to read Superman, Lois, and Clark. And so I hop on Comixology, and most of the issues are still at $3.99. You know, about half of the eight issues, four of the eight are dropped to $2.99, but it's going to cost me, you know, a little around $25 essentially to pick up the entire run. And then I go to look for the trade. The trade doesn't drop until September. And the book ended.
Yeah,
like, you know what
sucks.
I mean? It's just, I'm that frustrated seems... with DC's publishing schedule or publishing, like, strategy in general as it pertains to the non-monthly titles, you know?
Yeah, and that's interesting because it should be, you know, your first six issues, there's your first arc, put it out a hardcover, and then 4 to 6 months later, there's your trade. But, you know, which is exactly what Marvel does, right?
Well, that's what Image drops them, like,
everybody
within
they put the trades right out.
Yeah, I've seen Image drop a trade the same day that the final issue of an arc comes out.
And it's under $10.
And a lot of times, yeah, the first trades anyway, but the
right
subsequent ones will probably be around like $15, you know, standard trade price. But the point being that whenever that story arc ends, Image drops a trade almost immediately. Like, if not on the day of, it's like within a month of it happening, and that. I'm like, man, if they can do that, as you know, and they don't even have the capital that DC has backing it, why can't DC get this stuff done in a much quicker fashion?
No.
Why are we waiting 6-7 months after a story ends to get a trade?
They don't have the capital, but they do have. They don't have the middle management either. They don't have all the mucky muck that keeps it from getting done. It's very, very strategic to get people on board. You see what happens, these first issues sell out, right, from Image, right away. And so it's there's this buzz, there's this hype. So I think they're to the point where they don't even solicit a series until it's all the way drawn, at least the first arc, so that they can get that done. It's all around that first trade / first 5-6 issues so that they can get you hooked in and subscribed either with your – pull list or whatever. So yeah, go ahead, Nick. I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, I mean, I was just gonna bring up another example. Like, okay, so 2 weeks ago we wrapped up Darkseid War, right? Mm-hmm. Same day Justice League 50 drops, the hardcover for Justice League for Darkseid War Part 1 drops, which means you're 4 months away probably from getting the soft cover of the first part, and another 3 or 4 months after that from finishing up Darkseid War. If you're trade waiting, you're gonna have to just assume you're 8 months behind at this point.
Just about. I did see that Darkseid War Part 2 is supposed to drop sometime like around September, October.
Okay, so a little bit faster, but still, yeah. I mean, what's the excuse for having the first part of that story not out until 2 weeks ago?
Oh, yeah, it should have been out like more than a month or two ago. Like, we should have had that hardcover very quickly. And Part 2, I think, should have been dropping like, if not June.
Next week, probably.
Next week or first, like opening weeks of July. Like, it should be out and just be done with it so people can read that, because I mean, we've talked about it at length that the Rebirth spoiler effect, you know, it just goes on and on. Like, it's almost instantaneous now because people are getting the books like on Tuesday and they can't hold their wad. They've just got to tell everybody about it, so the big spoilers, they hit almost immediately.
That's not even as frustrating to me as the companies themselves giving their spoilers out freely. That's what frustrates me. Like, whether it's Marvel going to like USA Today with their Captain America thing, or DC practically sending Rebirth spoilers to every corner of the known freaking universe, and the internet is populated with them for a full week before the book ever comes out, I don't understand the value in that. Like, sure, I mean, you could do what the movies do. Allow review copies out, but put a spoiler embargo out, and anybody who breaks the embargo doesn't get advanced copies from DC anymore going forward. It's easy.
As a cynic, as a skeptic, I know exactly why Marvel put out the Captain America. Murka, Captain
Todd.
Well.
Todd was becoming simpatico with his southern compatriots there for a moment.
Yeah, when in Rome,
Georgia.
When in Rome, Georgia. Very good. Or Troy. Wait, no, that's Greek.
That's
very good. Shout out to Greg Phillips. How you doing, brother?
No, we're all of us are Troy alumni.
Yes.
Okay, that's true. You all went there. My friend Justin, I don't know if you guys caught this. Russell, you did catch this. My friend Justin has been on a cross-country road trip, and he's a vlogger, and he just stopped by and checked out Troy, the campus, and all the civil rights stuff that was there, so which was really neat because it's like my world's converging.
Weird.
That was neat. An odd moment. I was like, wow, he's like – when he's walking over to the civil rights monument that's by the there's a civil rights museum that's like right by my office. I was like, dude, you're like,
he was, you know, right there.
Yeah, yeah, it's like you're like right outside my door.
Plus yeah, the terms, yeah, cross-country road trip and Troy, Alabama were two terms I'd never thought to put together in, yeah, my head till that happened.
Yeah, no, he was visiting friends in Georgia and then he went to Disney World, so it's just driving back, and he lives in Anaheim, so,
oh wow,
that was just cool, his man. Way so he did the Route 66 on the way there and then visit all the stuff. He's a Mark Twain junkie, so he checked out Hannibal, Missouri, and
right,
all these right, cool places, and then he visited his friend in Georgia. So anyway, so Aquaman, right?
And we're back.
Random bullshit is what the name of this issue is.
So yeah, when in Rome, Captain America, Marvel deliberately was trying to steal some thunder. So hey, Ben, I hear you. I see you.
Ben's totally going to be on the show pretty soon, too.
I know. That's all right. But Marvel has done that from the get-go. If DC has a big thing, and you know, if DC didn't have 15 million middle managers to mess things up, they'd do the same thing if Marvel was dropping something big at that day. But right, Marvel, historically, if DC's got something going on, they have counter-programming to leech some of the publicity off of that, which is fine. It's been a competition for 70 years now.
Yeah, and we've all, you know, benefited and not so benefited from it, you know, just depending on what it is they're doing. And but I'd say that going back to trying to get back to Rebirth and Aquaman, right now I'd say we're all benefiting pretty well, because I can't say that, you know, Aquaman has had a better run than he's getting right now. And he is one of those characters that, yeah, I guess we should just, you know, talk about it because we've kind of avoided the subject, that he is one of those characters that is just maligned by the larger public who don't really know that much about him. All they know are the jokes, the punchlines for Family Guy or Robot Chicken or what have you. So do you guys think that these comics, like, being this good, might have, like, maybe not an immediate effect, but like a little bit later on down the road, could we see a turnaround for Aquaman? Is that, do you feel like that maybe that's coming?
Go ahead, Nick.
Based on the comics themselves, I'd say no, because you got to remember the crossover audience between the general public and the people who are reading these comics is very small. What it's going to take, and I know we'll talk about this in a little bit, is something akin to what happened with Iron Man in 2008. It's going to take a big budget motion picture adaptation that's out there in the public consciousness that the general public can latch onto in an easy to digest 2-hour format to really turn people's opinions around on it. Because, I mean, granted, he didn't get mocked by the general public before 2008, but Iron Man, as we've said before, was a C-list character at best. And you know, that movie turned it around. I think the Aquaman comics have helped to improve the character's standing among comics fans, because even among fans of DC, I mean, that character was still mocked. Like, I was one of those people who, before Geoff Johns, I would have never read an Aquaman comic. I didn't give a shit about Aquaman. I didn't want to read a book about the guy who talks to fishes. You know, I didn't care anything about that. And these books have really turned me around on the entire concept. But I already had my foot in the door. I already had my foot in the door of the comic shop in a way that the general public doesn't. So I say it's going to take a big performance either in Justice League or especially in the solo movie from Momoa to really redeem this character in the eyes of the general public.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
I agree, certainly. I think the comics fans are starting to come around just because what's happened to Aquaman books in the past couple of years since Geoff Johns, it's been, oh, this is why we like comics. This is the, oh yeah, this is what
happened with Flash and happened with Green Arrow, Green Lantern, happened with Justice Society, readdressing what the core purpose of the character is, getting him back to his roots, and telling interesting stories with good characterization and humor has been the key. And that's why I like comics. I always have since I was a little kid. I latched onto the interesting stuff. So go ahead.
And it's hard to go wrong having a scene with Aquaman walking into a seafood restaurant and ordering the fish and chips and the whole room just stops.
That to me is so great. And yeah, who assumed that he would not eat his friends, right? The people, the things he talked to, he's going to eat. He's going to eat the seahorse? What? But, I think that's a brilliant take, and that's the hook to me. That first episode, that first issue, and when everybody knows that scene. You know, if you've read that scene, that's what sticks. And so, it addressed everything, the core of the character, got it out of the way, and owned it in the same way. And, he doesn't even have primary colors in his costume, for crying out loud.
No, and I hope everybody at home who's listening to this has been keeping up with the sheer number of unintentional puns that have been made within these sentences, because I've been sitting over here just trying to hold it in.
I think I'm a little bit behind. I'm a little bit underwater on these.
Ah, yes. Well, that hook joke got me anyway. But we've dipped our toes into the murky waters that is Aquaman. And... we've talked a good bit about the history of the character, his appearance in certain popular video games, and our favorite stories from the comic books. What makes the character endearing? And before we go to break, I do want to get from both of you guys, what is it to you that makes Aquaman a good character? What is it about him that makes you want to keep reading his character? Nick, I'll start with you. Like, what made you a fan?
I mean, obviously, in addition to the fact that Geoff Johns wrote it, so it automatically had a benefit for me. I think at a core level, it's that duality. It's that being torn between two cultures. Because I mean, I think all of us have experienced that in our own personal lives at some point. Whether it's within subsections of your own family or subsections of your high school or whatever it may be, there's always this pull between two distinct personalities that you have. And I think that just speaks to a part of the human experience. So that's what it is for me. And then also, hard not to sympathize with a guy that's bedding a smoking hot redhead on a frequent basis. So,
oh yes. And, I can't argue against any of those points. Especially
I don't sympathize with Cyclops.
Oh, God. He's got to take a shot at Tim. You know Tim's going to come on here and rant, right? And I'm going to be the one that gets to hear it.
Wolverine was right.
Yeah.
Oh, God, here we go.
Wolverine's on his bed right now holding a picture of Tim.
Poor Tim. Not even here to defend himself. But Todd, your take on Aquaman, what makes him great?
What makes him great are his limitations. If you read a JLA story, which is how many of us are introduced to Aquaman, sometimes he's rendered useless or rendered where his powers are irrelevant. And so, he has to overcome those things and contribute in a different manner. But to me, he's the guy that's hanging out with the more popular crowd, but he secretly knows that he's better in certain circumstances than any of them to me. He's a blondie, and I grew up as a towhead, so I always, when you're playing trampoline wrestling, guess who I got to be? I was always Aquaman. So he's always had a special part in my heart as far as, I always related to him a little bit, but I didn't really start loving him till the 80s and where, this is actually a pretty interesting character, and he's doing unexpected things and being parts of unexpected stories. So go ahead.
No, you're fine. Go ahead.
Just that he's got his limitations, but at the same time, there are opportunities where he is going to be the badass. He's going to be the alpha at the same time.
What's also cool is, unlike other members in the League, specifically Superman and Martian Manhunter, who hail from these deceased cultures, his culture is still alive and well, and he still has to go back and, make an effort to be a part of that Atlantean culture and find a way to reconcile those two at the same time, whereas Superman and Martian Manhunter both have the benefit of being able to immerse themselves deeply in just one of those rather than having to maintain those dual personalities or dual identities.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and personally, like I said before, I don't like the Atlantis story. So to me, maybe it would make it even more cool. I'd latch onto the character maybe a little bit more were there no Atlantis at all at this point. But then again, it's just one of those contradictions. You know, I love gatherings, but I hate people.
And the Clerks reference is complete.
There you go.
For me, I'm kind of a lot like Nick. I agree with all of his points about Aquaman. I'm actually one that really enjoys the Atlantis side of the story, probably because I don't have like a ton of experience with it. And reading Geoff Johns' take on it and how he immersed Arthur back into that, I was like, wow, this is, you know, something. This is very different for me, and something that I'm just discovering for this first time. And I love the interplay of it, the politics that came into to play with the story. I felt like it really showed that other side, that other struggle that Aquaman has to deal with, that is very different from pretty much every other hero.
It did make him more unique.
Yeah, it makes him stand out, because I can't think of any other hero in the league who deals with that. Who would even have to deal with that? I mean, the closest would be Superman during like the New Krypton story. But to that end, we're going to come up on our first break, first and only break of the session. And when we come back, we're going to be talking about Aquaman and other media, specifically like the TV shows that he's been part of, and of course the upcoming movie starring Jason Momoa that's going to be directed by James Wan, who just had another hit movie drop this past week with The Conjuring 2. So when we come back, we'll be talking about that. So we will see you guys in just a few minutes.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation, placetobenation.com. The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to The Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and placetobenation.com. And we now offer them to you on two great feeds as well. On the Place to Be podcast feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, with our famous vintage vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with clotheslines and headlines, main event, Mission Indie Possible, in our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on WWE, NXT, and Ring of Honor Super shows. Relive Wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse and the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling Podcast as we dive into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. We also have sports covered too with the Sports Lounge, the TJ McClune Show, and NBA Team Podcast. On our brand new PTB Pop podcast feed, we offer great shows such as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the hard-traveling fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, and Imaginary Stories. Subscribe to both feeds on iTunes and be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All these shows are available on PlayStation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to check out on the right-hand side of the site for details on how to support the site when you shop at Amazon and download our free Place to Be Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlayStation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
This is Parv, and I'm here to tell you to listen and subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only Place to Be Nation Podcast Network. That's the PWO-PTBN Podcast Network, where you'll find a ton of in-depth shows done by hardcore fans. We've got Chris Zellner's 1-2 Punch of Exile on Bad Street, and with David Bickenspan, a smash hit Between the Sheets. We've got Wrestling Culture with Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave, Goodwill Wrestling and the Reaction Shows with Good Old Will from Texas. We've got This Week in Wrestling with my man Pete and Johnny Sorrow, Stephen Graham and Tim Livingston's Pro Wrestling Super Show, Tag Teams Back Again with Kelly and Marty Sleaze, and a ton of other great shows too. And of course, there's Titans of Wrestling and Where the Big Boys Play with yours truly and some dude from down south called Chad. PWO, PTBN, Podcast Network.
Ariel, listen to me. The human world, it's a mess. Life under the sea is better than anything they got up there. The seaweed is always greener in somebody else's lake. You dream about going up there, but that is a big mistake. Just look at the world around you, right here on the ocean floor. Such wonderful things around you. What more are you looking for? Under the sea, under the sea. Darling, it's better down where it's wetter. Take it from me. Up on the shore, they work all day. Out in the sun, they slave away. While we've been boating full time, you're floating under the sea.
And we're back. Because it is better down where it's wetter. You can take that from me. And we're still talking Aquaman on the podcast today because Aquaman Rebirth came out this past week as of this recording. And it was great. We all were pretty high on the issue. Joining me again is Mr. Nick Duke from the Hard Traveling Fanboys. And from Conversation Comics and Weber Has Issues, Mr. Todd Weber. Really glad you guys could both join me for this podcast because, you know, it's always fun to talk about Aquaman with people who get it, with people who understand my own affinity for the character. And we each have different histories with him, some, you know, with some overlapping, of course. But what we're going to talk about right now is Aquaman's many, as it turns out, appearances in other media besides comics. He's shown up on television. He's got a pretty high-profile movie coming out pretty soon, or at least going to be in the works pretty soon. And, of course, he's going to be in Zack Snyder's Justice League next year, which is filming in London right now. But first, let's kind of go a little chronological with it, Aquaman and other media. And Todd, you're probably going to be able to talk a little bit more about this than Nick or I would. I vaguely remember Super Friends from way back in the day, and I remember Aquaman being a part of that. So tell the good folks at home, what was Aquaman's role in that show?
Well, usually it was monitor duty, I think.
Was he riding a seahorse all the time? Because that's what
all
I
the
pictured.
Time. Anytime, you know, yes. he would get the JLA or actually the Super Friends distress alarm, and he'd be riding down on his giant seahorse underground, and you'd see the little pencil drawn circles for him for his telepathy.
I was about to say, and then he'd put both hands to his temples, kind of like yep. Xavier in the 92 series.
But there was sound effect. There was no incredible power.
But there was no incredible power there, yeah, exactly.
And you know, he would contribute somehow, but Super Friends was such a weird little show. You'd see him actually more on the interstitials of the – when they were on commercial, he would have like this little Super Friends lesson or Super Friends moment, you know, one to grow on or stuff like that. What was the more you know. Kinds of things, and it was weird because he had this old man's voice. If you're listening to the Super Friends Aquaman voice, it was very couldn't have been any more white and old man. Pretty funny. He was, you know, I had the Mego figure back then, and let's see, what else did I have? Do I have any other Superman or Aquaman memorabilia? I thought
you just were able to grab a Mego figure. I remember you tweeting about that.
I'm reclaiming my childhood, Nick.
Okay.
I bought one as a grown up because my mom threw the old ones out when I was a little kid. So,
wow.
Yeah. So I have these fond memories of these Mego dolls, action figures, and during the podcast it actually arrived during the break, which was great. So
that's pretty awesome. So you got an Aquaman figure while we were on break.
Literally while I was recording not tonight, but when I was recording
his first conversation comic.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I was
Stephanie.
Lost on that. Yeah. And
his first episode of Conversation Comics, Weber Has Issues, whatever we're actually calling it formally.
Yeah, we do need to clear that up because you got a mouthful of a title there, man.
I intend it to be PTBN's Conversation Comics, but I guess it's Weber Has Issues, Todd Weber's Conversation, according to Justin. If you listen to the break we just listened to in the intermission, it's Todd Weber's Conversation, which is not right. That's not right. You have to go back and re-edit it. It should be Place to Be Nation's conversation.
Oh, do we have new? Do we have new ads?
I haven't heard.
I did not know that.
It's been updated with a new podcast feed, Place to Be Nation Pop. So yeah, wow. It is. It's new. I've got one, and
that is
all the podcasts I'm mixing and editing. We'll have it.
We've gotten off so far off topic throughout this podcast, but while we're on the topic of your podcast, I'm just going to throw it out there because you weren't even involved in the conversation yesterday. But the thread that Russell and I had going about Ultimate Spider-Man yesterday, whenever you want me to come on and do an all Ultimate Spider-Man or all Ultimate Universe podcast, I'm ready because that whetted my appetite for that era of comics all over again.
Especially because
that's the era I remember, or that's without question the era or run of comics I remember with the most detail, being able to remember like specific issue numbers when things happened and that kind of thing. So,
yeah, it totally like spiraled out there, and I was like, man, this is like getting me excited to go and read some Ultimate Spider-Man. But anyway, getting back on our Aquaman track. So Todd, you got that action figure, and that was a Super Friends action figure, right? Like that was based off of that line.
They didn't use the actual Super Friends words, but it was mostly the big DC characters, the Superman, Batman, Robin. Yeah. Robin, who was considered one of the Justice League on the TV shows, you know, on Super Friends, but in the comics he really wasn't. He was only in the Batman books and the Titans books, but he was still very marketable for their properties. Let's see, who else did you have in those Mego series? You had Shazam, who was really, it's Captain Marvel, guys. It's not Shazam. My very personal pet peeve about that character. You had Isis, who, if you Google search Isis on eBay these days, does not come up with a Mego figure from the 70s.
We don't advise you to do that either.
And they had all the Bat villains. They had Joker, Catwoman, Penguin and Riddler. So, yeah, I love that toy line. And then the Super Friends cartoon went on for years. It started in the early 70s, 73 or so, and went on until 85, 86, to a post-crisis era. And the later editions of Super Friends had characters like Cyborg and Firestorm joining. But Aquaman was always kind of there. You know, very rarely were Aquaman-centric episodes. But something would always happen where he'd have to go on a mission and it would involve sea travel, or you know, retrieving something from the sea, or battling somebody in the sea.
Yeah.
So, and there was the one perfect series of Challenge of the Super Friends, where he had the Super Friends versus the Legion of Doom, where he had kind of a villain for every hero, and that's what introduced Black Manta into TV too. So he had Batman, and then he had Black Manta, and he had a very stereotypical. Almost not quite Cobra Commander's voice, but he had that dark, almost kind of voice going on.
I vaguely remember that as a kid because, like I said, it was running even in 85, and I was pretty young then. But I do remember catching like a lot of reruns and Aquaman.
Cartoon Network. Cartoon Network had.
And like it was in syndication for a long time, and that's how I wound up seeing it. But I always remembered Aquaman just being background. Like, he was never out front. He never seemed to be all that prominent. So I never paid him, like, all that much attention back then. It wasn't until, like, much later that I really started to notice Aquaman's presence. And that was when he was introduced in Superman the Animated Series. They didn't do a ton with him. Like, he had it might have just been like a one-off episode that just introduced him, but it was kind of a neat idea. He had that very classic Aquaman look, and of course they took him really far away from water, so his powers would diminish a little bit. But it kind of laid the groundwork for him to exist in that Bruce Timm and Paul Dini world, and we see him come back later on in Justice League and Justice League Unlimited. I remember that episode where we were talking about adapting that Death of a Prince story arc for film or for television, and they kind of sort of did it in Justice League Unlimited or Justice League actually. But instead of like killing a toddler, the toddler survives, and that's when Aquaman loses his hand and replaces it with a harpoon, much like he had during the Peter David run, which I, at the time, I thought, wow, that's pretty dark for a cartoon. Nick, what was your impression of Aquaman once he was introduced into Justice League?
You know, I didn't really know much, a whole lot about the character at the time. It was, you know, kind of my first real exposure to it because, you know, my experience with comics is probably a lot of, different from you guys in that I had always been interested in comics and superheroes and that kind of thing, but I didn't really start reading hardcore until, let's see, it would have been about early 2003 because it would have been after the release of Sam Raimi's Spider-Man that I kind of got pretty deep into him. So that would have been right around, you know, the time when Justice League was, you know, getting going pretty hard. So still wasn't reading a whole lot of DC, but I thought it was a pretty cool introduction to the character. And like I was kind of stunned, especially by, you know, in comparison to the other episodes of Justice League that had aired to that point, because the Aquaman episode, if I remember correctly, is probably only the third or fourth multi-part Justice League episode in that first season.
Yeah,
and
it
so it's pretty dark compared to those two or three stories they had done before that.
It really was. That was something that I knew about. I was aware of the Death of a Prince story. So the whole I knew that Aquaman's son was slated to die somehow. And when they were introducing that character, introducing the concepts, including Mira on Justice League, I thought, you know, for sure they would they actually go there? Would they actually do that? And then as it was setting up to do it, I was like, there for a minute, I thought, oh, God, we're about to actually see the death of an infant in a cartoon that's airing on Cartoon Network. This is this is either the stupidest thing they've ever done or the ballsiest, or maybe a little bit of both. And, of course, it comes back and the infant survives because Aquaman saves his son, but in the process of doing so, he loses a hand. Now, they didn't show, like, blood dripping or anything, but that rag he wrapped around his wrist certainly wasn't red before he put it on there. So that was a little bit far. And then of course they introduced the, harpoon hand that, Todd referenced before. So it was a little callback to the Peter David run. Todd, did you see those episodes?
I haven't seen the actual Superman one where he was the classic look, but I remember the latter Justice League episodes where he showed up. Actually, it was more Justice League Unlimited, and he was kind of fully realized as the Peter David Aquaman post-hook, post-harpoon and everything, kind of reclaiming his dignity and everything like that. So that was neat that they had taken the character and actually developed him a little bit, had progressed him where he wasn't the same as he was when he was introduced. And, you know, there wasn't a lot between the Tim and Dini series and Super Friends as far as multimedia representation of Aquaman, as far as I recall. I mean, there were superpowers, and that was the thing. I guess they did some figures and things like that, but they didn't do a lot of he wasn't part of any cartoons before that. I think the DC stuff was limited to just the Tim Dini universe, and he showed up in mid-90s, late-90s in the Superman thing, and then Justice League, you have this story happening. So it was kind of cool that they had taken that changed Aquaman, that more mature Aquaman who's seen it, has gone through it and had stuff happen, and made that actually be the status quo for the character, kind of the resting point for the character. They even have a maquette available, right? They have the statue available, and it's shirtless Aquaman with the beard and the battle armor on the one shoulder and the harpoon hand. And
yeah,
so that's
you can tell that that Peter David influence, it reaches far. It reached all the way into to Justice League, Justice League Unlimited. It didn't quite make it into Smallville, though.
No,
because we had one appearance.
It did, however, make it into whenever Ultimate Spider-Man adapted Miles Morales. It did come into that, so that was good.
Yes,
right. When Peter David wrote that part, actually, when he wrote Astro City, it showed up in there too.
Weird.
And then when he wrote John Byrne's Next Man, it really came to a head.
We're just never going to get tired of messing with Peter David. but all credit in the world to his Aquaman run. It's still highly influential.
And comics wise, if you read, you know, some of the best comics from the late 90s were the Grant Morrison JLAs, right? With Howard Porter.
Yeah.
And that's the Aquaman that's in those, right? It is. Not the Savage Aquaman, but the King Aquaman, the battle armor, you know, I don't want to call him the Image Aquaman, but definitely had that influence post Image comics.
Yeah, the 90s influence was far reaching and wide, and Aquaman was definitely one of those most affected by it. It's been a little while since I've read those JLA issues, but I do remember him being featured pretty prominently there. And at least Grant Morrison gave him, you know, more to do. He felt like he was a legit member of the team, a far cry from Super Friends. And when he was introduced in Smallville, he was kind of I guess I could call him a pompous ass, because that was the impression that I got of him. Was he was
on Smallville?
Yeah,
like AC Curry.
Yeah, they call him AC. It was like, man, they really just
do. They really call him AC?
Yeah,
he is known as AC. Yeah, but
isn't it good?
But he had an orange hoodie, so there's that.
Yeah,
And actually, chronologically, that happened after the what's his name, Justin Hartley, Green Arrow character, was on Smallville.
Yep.
So they kind of formed their own little, eventually, mini Justice League with the Impulse character. Was I don't know if they called him? Did they call him Bart?
It was Bart Allen.
And they had Cyborg, and they had Green Arrow, Clark, and so they had the and. I think I remember them having an actual Smallville Justice League that was basically guys in leather jackets. That was kind of the vibe. That's, but that actually happened after the pilot, after the Mercy Reef Aquaman pilot they shot.
Yeah, it did.
Technically.
That was a thing that I think I've seen that. I think I've seen at least most of it anyway. And, yeah, it was pretty bad. So I can understand why that didn't take off.
If you have the Throne of Atlantis DVD, it's a special feature on that.
Yes, it is. I forgot about that. That's in there. So if you have that Throne of Atlantis Blu-ray or DVD, go look for that special feature. You will not be disappointed. Or maybe
they call it Mercy Reef, but it's really, you know, they market it as Aquaman, which is kind of funny. And it's Justin Hartley, who ended up playing Green Arrow as Aquaman. And yeah. Ving Rhames is kind of his mentor character. And Adrian Plicky is the bad guy, is the siren character, if I recall correctly. I have to go back on IMDb, but I believe it is. I know it's definitely Adrian Plicky, which is funny because she's ended up being Wonder Woman on the failed pilot. And then she was later on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. as Mockingbird. So it's pretty
and
cool.
And then in the failed pilot for Marvel's Most Wanted, apparently.
Yeah.
The pilot that was never made. They gave him a backdoor episode to actually make that happen. And then ABC's like, eh, maybe not. Because, yeah, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is doing so great by itself. Ugh. They just got rid of the two best elements of the show.
They'll be back.
Yeah, maybe. I hope. Because if they don't come back, there's really no reason for me to keep watching that show.
There's been no show more inconsistent than that one, because when it's good, it's really good and it ties into the comics and you see where it has a very clear direction. But when it's just kind of stretching out and stalling for time, it's so bad. It's so, it's just this whole forcibly bringing the Inhumans thing around has been just a turd, of a storyline. And I don't care anymore. They killed the best thing about it, which was Grant Ward as a bad guy, as a pure evil Hydra sympathizer. And now they've turned him into a very generic. I haven't finished because my wife hasn't seen Civil War yet. So I said, we can't watch the last two because they tie into Civil War.
No,
so.
You totally can.
I haven't seen any since the middle of season two, so don't feel bad.
Okay, well,
Todd,
all right.
Todd, I'll go ahead and tell you, you can watch them without watching Civil War.
Right. Well,
the last
I'm just
episode
saying,
I saw was, if you remember the episode in season two where Sky's dad, played by the captain from How I Met Your Mother, and that's all. That's all. Whatever you want to call him, Todd, that's fine. He's the captain from How I Met Your Mother.
Where he's the guy that banged Elizabeth Berkley in Showgirls in the hot tub. That's who he is.
As I was saying, where the captain from How I Met Your Mother assembled all the cheesy supervillains with like the one chick that had razors for teeth, and they all had this big fight at the at this high school football stadium. If you remember that episode, that was the last show I've seen. And it was awful. It's probably the worst
episode. It's a blind spot for me. Worse than Robin Sparkles? Is that her name?
We'll have to get George Duncan on here if we want to get some How I Met Your Mother rage going.
We're on the Himyam cast, folks.
I don't have the rage towards that show that some people do. Like,
I love that show.
I also don't have the love for, like, it's a serviceable comedy. Solid B-plus player, a la Mike Sanders, I'd say.
I've watched that show so many times through. But yes, that the whole Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. thing is just...
Chloe's dad, yeah.
Chloe's
What's
dad.
What's her name? No, Chloe Bennett. That's the actress.
Actress name.
Daisy.
Wait. And now she's Daisy, that's right.
Now that's not getting confusing for anybody.
Well, what's going on is that they're introducing the Registration Act, right?
They kind of sort of alluded to it in a few different places, and it's like, yeah, we're totally doing that, and then it's a story for like two episodes, and then they're like, whatever.
Regardless of the overall quality of the show, it's become increasingly apparent that the ultimate promise of the show when it was started is that we were going to be given a weekly episodic adventure that was going to tie heavily into the actual cinematic universe.
Yeah.
That doesn't exist.
No, yeah. It doesn't.
The MCU.
It ties in as much as you want it in your head to tie in. And that's as much as it ties in.
They give no Fs about the TV shows. They don't.
It's the illusion of a connected universe, honestly, because they say they take place in that universe, but can anybody recall the last time that one of the movies acknowledged a TV show?
It's weird to me because I honestly feel like the Netflix shows feel more connected to the cinematic universe than Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. does. And the reason for that is, like, just from the way the characters talk in the Netflix shows, you get the impression that the Battle of New York was an event that had a big impact on the city in which these characters live. And it's an event that was kind of a flashpoint, regardless of whether or not you actually ever see the fallout from it on screen. It's heavily alluded to that it had an impact on these characters.
You know, I will say that Agent Carter was definitely part of the MCU more than Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. ever was.
Yeah, it felt like there were actual consequences that came from that. It felt like it changed something or it mattered. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. hasn't felt like it mattered since probably the Age of Ultron tie-in episode. That was the last time that anybody could safely say that Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. had anything impactful happen.
So I can go ahead and finish the season is what you're saying.
Yeah, go ahead.
And I can go ahead and finish season two and start season three.
If you must.
Beginning of season three is actually pretty good. Up until the break, I think it's actually really good. And then the second half has just been poop.
During my break from, you know, with Arrow and Flash and Legends of Tomorrow and Walking Dead all being, you know, in their break during the summer, my main focus is to catch up on Supergirl because I think I need to be ready to go on that one for when it makes the move over to the CW. So that'll be my main focus. Then probably Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. after that. And then at the very bottom of that list will be Gotham.
And yeah, I'm actually on like episode 18 or 19 of Gotham season one. I'm trying, but man, just as they start to get good, they make it
difficult. The last episode I saw was where Fish Mooney scooped her eye out with a spoon.
I watched like a couple of episodes after that, and one of them, I want to say it was episode 18, I think, was probably the worst episode of the series, and it just has to be seen to be believed as to just how awful, like, everything from the writing to the acting. It is the worst.
I may come back at some point, but Todd will understand this. My real life equivalent of the longtime Blog of Doom running gag of the Seinfeld gif of Jerry clap, like just kind of put his hands up and walking out of the theater, was the moment when they revealed who was holding Fish Mooney and the other people, and they actually called him Dr. Dolmacher. that was my point, which I was like, well, and just kind of checked out. I had no interest in coming back at that point.
Kapelpoot and Dalmukmacher.
Kapelpoot.
Between those two things. And then, of course, you know, who's we'll get it. Season two has been, I will say, more inconsistent than season one, but in a good way, because a third of the episodes have been pretty decent of Gotham, in my opinion.
But have they been good enough to make up? Like, to me, part of the charm of Gotham is hate watching it. Like, does it even have that charm for it anymore in season two?
There has been a healthy amount of hate watching, but they've also, you have to know that Fish Mooney is not part of season two. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge, until the last three episodes. So,
spoiler alert.
Sorry.
You really just sold me on the concept, Todd.
Well, but it's also been very villain-centric. They haven't had a whole lot of Harvey Dent, and as the most part. And they've also brought in Michael Chilkis. So this is me in public giving a half-hearted defense of Gotham. It's not as bad. And I would say it's better than the second half of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. has been this year.
And I did see they were getting ready to cast.
That's a pretty low bar.
It is.
For season three. So that means, you know, in 10 years, whenever Bruce is finally ready to be Batman, he can catch some of that MILF Vicky Vale action.
Hey, yeah,
they had Silver St. Cloud in the first half of this season.
Was she a kid or an adult?
She was a contemporary of Bruce's.
Okay,
school-age
that at
girl.
Least, like, doesn't bother me as much.
Absolutely, yeah.
My impression is that they're going to cast Vicky Vale as a working journalist, and that just, like, that's my entire issue with the show, is if you don't want to have Batman, that's fine, but you need to take, you know, like, swallow the pill that comes with it of not being able to have any of his age, you know.
Right.
Age-appropriate contemporaries, which
Batman is
eliminate
not,
most of the mythos.
All of his bad guys are not 20 years older than he is, which is what
Penguin
you're kind
of... Penguin I can live with. That one's fine. I can even start to understand that one, but Harvey Dent especially, that one bothered me from the
Two-Face, Mr. Freeze, Mr. Freeze.
Yeah,
I'm on beer 7 right now. So, Mr. Freeze is like 40 years old in the contemporary series, in Gotham right now. And when is Gotham supposed to be? Is it supposed to be current? Is it supposed to be 2016?
No one knows.
The one thing that Gotham will never establish is when exactly it takes place, and that is just have to.
As
Greg
and I discussed when we did our review of Batman 89, it attempts to do the Batman the Animated Series thing of trying to feel timeless and yet fails miserably in a way that Batman the Animated Series never did. It is never able to capture that essence. But anyway,
but
Aquaman.
Yes, we're gonna get on the subject eventually. But actually, Batman is a good segue because the most recent, not counting like film, but on television, the most recent iteration of Aquaman on television has actually been on a Batman show, on Batman the Brave and the Bold. Now, I've only seen a little bit of this, but the Aquaman that is played there is definitely played for laughs. He's like most of that show, because it's not meant to be taken seriously. It's definitely a more campy show. I mean, they got Diedrich Bader doing the voice of Batman, for God's sake.
Which, speaking of, if we're going with Kevin Smith references, it's always fun to imagine Batman saying, "Oh, what a lovely tea party."
And that, I don't know if that's it. I've not watched much of Batman the Brave and the Bold. I do remember seeing the Aquaman parts because some guys at my the old comic shop in Enterprise, they were talking that up, saying that it was really funny. So I checked some of that out, and yeah, they basically took Aquaman, and if you'll think of like the most pompous, over-the-top version of Thor that you've ever seen, that's Aquaman in Batman the Brave and the Bold.
Yeah, it's a Bruce Campbell Aquaman, basically.
Yes, it is.
You know,
It's as over-the-top and campy as it gets.
And, you know, is it them just kind of throwing up their hands and saying, okay, this is, we get it, he is a joke, and so let's really make him a joke?
Isn't that kind of what Brave and the Bold is, though, as a show?
Yes.
Like, so,
absolutely.
I've not seen that episode. I've only seen a couple of episodes of Brave and the Bold. And the impression I get from the show, its tone, is that that's kind of what it's going for, not just with Aquaman, but with all the guest characters it brings in, is that it's a more comedic, lighthearted take on these characters. So I don't know if that's necessarily a dig at Aquaman himself, but more just, you know, Aquaman viewed through the specific prism of that show.
Yeah, and I mean, to me, it came off as more of steering into the skid. Like, you know, the jokes are there, so, and you know that you're on a campy show, so you know what? Don't even try to make the character something to be taken seriously. Just, you know, we take the most amount of campiness that you possibly can and just go for it. And they did. And from what I've seen of it, I laughed. I thought that it was fairly funny.
It is funny, yeah.
It's a good joke. It's a different type of Aquaman joke. It's the kind that's self-aware. It's not the unintentional Aquaman riding a seahorse and being useless type of thing. It was let's make Aquaman into the biggest pompous ass who is also kind of useless joke. And for the most part, it works. So if you're if you got young kids or something at home and you want to introduce them to DC characters and, you know, make them laugh and, let them have fun with the, with those particular sets, I would actually say that show is a pretty good place to start.
Yeah. Or you could be like me and introduce your 2-year-old to Batman, the animated series, and she's doing pretty well with that. So I'm going to stick with my approach.
Yeah, I'll put your 2-year-old over just Jordan Duncan's kids who hate that show. So
do what?
Oh, Jordan Duncan's
here
kids,
we go.
This is as third person as possible, but Jordan's kids, that's his Batman, is Batman the Animated Series. So he's been waiting to show TAS to his kids, and they hate it. That's not their Batman, which is really funny.
Jordan Duncan, you have failed these children.
You have failed Detroit.
Oh, I'm still kind of sitting over here in shock. Like, kids don't like Batman the Animated Series? What weird alternate universe do we live in?
I think my daughter has realized what it is. It's like, she's smarter than most 2-year-olds in that she realizes I'm like, hey, go to your room and pick up your toys. She can be like, we watch Batman, and I'm gonna be like, yeah, let's do that instead. Like, no, I can't turn down that attempt at indoctrination. I don't think she knows that at this point.
She has figured out your buttons. It didn't take long. That is a very intelligent child.
Wow.
I'm impressed. Like, seriously, I'm kind of moved by that a little bit. But speaking of moving things on into the future, to stuff that we've only seen just a little bit of up to this point, we have a small appearance of Aquaman in Batman v Superman. An extremely minor cameo, and that's going to lead to a much bigger role in Justice League. So I know we're probably all going to have very different opinions and very different takes on where they're going with this, or at least what we've seen so far, because honestly, we don't really know that much.
We don't know.
Yeah, we have no idea what exactly is going to happen. I know what James Wan, the director of the solo film, has said, and that filled me with a lot of hope, but what is each of you guys' impressions of the direction that they're headed with the Jason Momoa version of Aquaman for Justice League and then for his solo film? Todd, why don't you kick us off with that one?
Okay, so my wife's Hawaiian and Jason Momoa is Hawaiian, so we have that little connection. You're like, oh, all of a sudden, you have this, like, interest from the ladies, shall we say, towards Jason Momoa and how he's hunky. And, you know, he is not the kind of guy you would associate the not taking seriously aspects of Aquaman. Not too different – well, very different from, say, Entourage. Did either of you see the Entourage things where the main character, Adrien Grenier – what's his character's name? Vince – on Entourage was cast as Aquaman, and they did a very ridiculous version of the suit.
I've never seen an episode of Entourage, and that's only because – not because I'm not sure the show's good. It's because the people I knew who liked the show were people that I did not trust their taste in comedy whatsoever. And so by proxy, yeah, I never had an interest in watching the show.
Yeah, it's not bad. It's luckily that it's a half-hour show each time. And it's very, shall we say, early 2000s. But yeah, I have that same thing about bands, Nick. in the 80s when I went to high school, there were people who wore Iron Maiden shirts and Metallica shirts. And like, wow, I would never like those bands because you people are idiots. Those particular people, the quality of those people who were into that particular band was such like, well, I'll never listen to that. But in my later days as an adult, like, wow, what was I missing? I could have gotten into those things. So, I didn't get into Entourage until, I don't know. I guess I had HBO, so I watched it. But it was hilarious that they threw in the Aquaman angle, and they threw it in definitely as a joke, as a tongue-in-cheek thing. Like, okay, this was based on the heels of the Raimi Spider-Mans, where we're going to make every property that we can into a film. And so they didn't show any actual footage of him in the suit, but they showed a title sequence, which was pretty ridiculous. Anyway, with Momoa, we will see. I am optimistic because if this was the only way to get him onto the big screen, then so be it. You know, it's not a racial thing. It's just like a cultural thing for me. It's like he's a New Englander. His origin has always been it's the lighthouse keeper with the princess from Atlantis, and that's how he came. So Jason Momoa is just like this big physical presence that is maybe a little bit more savage than what we've seen in Aquaman, with the exception of the Peter David thing. So maybe that's what the the Warner Brothers overseers are saying is, okay, we've got this image and we can make this work. We can reconcile this in the universe. And I'm kind of surprised that they haven't gone back and had him do more. I was expecting more than him just being a little YouTube clip in the Superman v Batman movie. So we will see. Momoa has definitely embraced the role. He is doing publicity, and he's done a lot already as the face of Aquaman. He's done interviews with places like the Aquaman Shrine, and any publicity already, he's definitely out there. So I'm hoping that it leads to good things, but I just want it to be Aquaman and not just this thing that they want to be Aquaman. Does that make sense?
It does. And I can kind of see where you're coming from there, because it's, to me, the impression that it gave me whenever I first saw him in costume, or even heard that he was cast, was that it felt like they were going to go with that Peter David take on the character,
right?
Something that's a little bit harder edged and would actually fit a little bit better in the film universe they've created thus far than, say, the traditional orange-scaled and green-finned Aquaman version would.
And that makes me wonder, you know, the Momoa casting came at a time when from what we had been led to believe in any event, that Zack Snyder was kind of calling most of the shots for the universe, and now we know that that's not really the case anymore, that Geoff Johns is doing it. And I have no doubt that Jason Momoa is going to do a good job, don't get me wrong. I think that going with a Polynesian take on it kind of makes more sense, not necessarily from the aspect of being the son of a New England lighthouse operator, but I kind of feel like logically the Atlanteans would look more – would not necessarily be blonde-haired, blue-eyed people. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That's kind of my thing. And so I think he's going to do a fine job from that aspect, but I almost wonder if Geoff Johns had taken over 3 years ago – if the casting decision might not have been different, if maybe the versions of these characters that have been cast at this point might not have been more akin to their comics counterpart than what Zack Snyder was going for.
And that's,
and it would make sense that Snyder, you know, given his attachment to The Dark Knight Returns and given his attachment to a very specific version of Superman, it makes sense that he would pull from that 90s savage era of Aquaman, does it not?
It does. Like that. That is totally Zack Snyder's taste. Like it's in his wheelhouse to go there, rather than even the Geoff Johns run, like the stuff that we have kind of gotten really emotionally attached to. But
then again, Snyder's the kind of guy, the kind of director that missed all the subtleties of Watchmen. He said, knowing that that would make you guys pissed off.
Oh, Todd.
It doesn't piss me off when people are wrong. I just feel sorry for you.
Hallelujah.
Yeah, I'm just going to feel sorry.
That's the one scene in the movie I can't defend. So you got that one. I'll tip of the cap to you, sir.
Yeah, I'm just going to have to give you that one because I got nothing for that. But
But that's literally the only scene in the movie I can't.
Yeah, think. From yeah, the rest of it I'm more than good with. But the
it's to me it's a good parallel because if that's the only Watchmen we'll ever get, it's good enough for me. Cinematically, it doesn't take away from the original work. And if this is the only Aquaman that we're going to get on the big screen, then so be it. Let's just enjoy it for what it is. It's going to get more people interested in the character and reading the character and liking the character.
And I certainly hope it does that because I can say that even with all the divisiveness that is Batman v Superman, at least as far as my local comic shops are concerned, they've seen a real uptick in interest in Wonder Woman. That has been almost across the board. Like, we've been experiencing much bigger sales on Wonder Woman trades, bigger interest, especially in her Rebirth issue that just came out. And I'm hoping that something similar will happen with Aquaman once Justice League comes out, because it really does feel like with like the way Momoa's been promoting like his own role and like just how committed he is to it, it feels like he's going to have quite the presence in the movie, and that there may really be something to that. Like he may be very central to the story, which we know virtually nothing about at this point. But also speaking of that, we've had some recent news come out with the director of the Aquaman solo film, James Wan, because I know you guys will remember it wasn't that long ago that Seth Graham Smith, who was the original director of The Flash, walked away from the movie for what was cited as creative differences. And it also was like right on that same day, this big rumor piece dropped from He Who Shall Never Be Named Again, because he destroyed all of his own credibility.
Does it rhyme with Bevan Durachi?
Yeah, something like that. And see, I wanted to make Nick laugh with this because he always says this is my favorite part of the show. And
rumors and speculation are Russell's favorite part of comic book movie.
Also my favorite Fleetwood Mac album, by the way. But yes.
If this were the early 2000s and Russell still had a MySpace, he would list LatinoReview.com as his homepage.
Oh, it's good.
Which is funny. I mean, historically, that dude, El Miambi, what's his name? Something like that.
He has been
a big DC fanboy.
He's not even there anymore, by the way.
No. Yeah, and he sold Heroic Hollywood or Latino Review.
He sold Latino
one of those.
Review.
Sold Latino yeah. Review and started Heroic right. Hollywood.
Okay. So, yeah. So, just disregard Latino Review anymore because he's actually, to me, even though he's always trying to get that first scoop and he's not always right, his heart is in the right place. He wants the films to do well. He really does. Farachi, I don't think so. He's like this agent of chaos to me.
Or the guy who's kind of taken over his role at Latino Review since he sold the site, Mario Francisco Robles. I had to work on that one to get it out. That dude is so married to, like, specific versions of these characters that, like, if it's not that, he's going to bitch incessantly. Like, pretty much, if we get anything other than the Chris Reeve Superman, he's going to hate it. To the point where, I don't know if you guys saw, but he wrote an open letter on Latino Review, like, begging Zack Snyder to step away because his Superman had ruined everything that he loved about Superman. And it's one of the most eye-rolling, ridiculous things you'll ever read.
I think I got into the first paragraph of that, and I was like, you know what? Nope. That was my Jerry Seinfeld gif moment. I was like, I got one paragraph into that, and I was like, shh, bye.
He's also the one that is insisting that, like, the upcoming Star Wars movie is going into reshoots for 55% of the movie next week.
And then that got debunked.
It did.
Mads Middle. I always mess up his name.
He's Mikkelsen.
Yeah. He was talking about the reshoots and saying that was not even a big deal. That they were actually adding a little bit more action and having a good time with it. Like it was something that they had planned to do after they finished the initial like principal photography. So I was like, well, there that is.
But the James Wan thing, I think, what is the saying? Haters are going to hate.
Yep, that was totally a thing because James Wan, whether he realizes it or not, had the most subtle and yet epic mic drop on that subject that he possibly could have done. And I don't think he necessarily meant to do it in the way that I perceived it or the way that many others did. But like a couple, it was like a week or so after that article came out that said he was feeling trepidation and that he was probably going to be the next guy to exit the DCEU. He goes on Twitter and on his Instagram, and he posts a picture of himself leaning up against a gigantic Aquaman mural. And he tweets that out, and I was like, huh, doesn't really seem like the dude who's all, like, worried or having, like, second thoughts about directing an Aquaman movie.
And correct me if I'm wrong, isn't that the next one to go into, like, isn't that the next one set to go into production?
Yeah, that's going
to
be...
Because we've got Wonder Woman, who is getting ready to wrap, is my understanding.
It's already wrapped. Principal Photography, right. They're in post.
Justice League, which is obviously in photography. Suicide Squad, obviously, which is in marketing, you know, the promotion standpoint.
Yep.
And then Aquaman is next, correct?
Yeah. I do believe so, yeah. Aquaman and Flash will be coming up very...
almost back-to-back, essentially.
Close enough to be called back-to-back. Like, they'll have to be filming around the same time. But yeah, they seem to be pretty on with their story because been noticing a lot of chatter on Twitter between James Wan, Patty Jenkins, and Jeff Johns. Like, they all seem to be working very closely together. And that,
you know, that's why I think, to me, of all these movies that are coming up, I think Suicide Squad looks awesome. Don't get me wrong, and I think Wonder Woman's going to be great. The movie I'm most fascinated to see in all of this is Justice League because it represents to me the last real story that's going to be told without Jeff Johns having that major overseeing influence on it, you know? And so I wonder what the transition between the before Jeff and after Jeff eras are going to look like. And I know that Jeff Johns was involved with all of these movies, don't get me wrong. But with him having more of a firm grip on this thing, I'm really interested to see what the dichotomy is between, say, Justice League 1, which has been, you know, which is being filmed, and Justice League 2, which has already been announced.
Yep, and I would say that even with Jeff Johns taking a much more active role, and I think he even is with Justice League, like his role is more so than what it was with Batman v Superman.
Right.
As is Ben Affleck, who was brought on as an executive producer and as a story guy for the film. So I think that... you're going to see a difference. I think that Justice League, even by Chris Terrio's own admission before any of that other stuff about Jeff and Ben was announced, had said that the tone of Justice League was lighter than Batman v Superman. But I don't think people should take that too far because Jeff Johns, as a creator, has never been the guy who would throw the baby out with the bathwater, so to speak.
Right, which is why I'm so intrigued by Justice League because Johns has always been willing to take what's there and find a way to marry it with what he wants to create. You know, try to find a gap, a bridge the gap between those two things. And so I'm very interested to see what Justice League does from the standpoint of, I feel like, and this is just my opinion, and I could certainly be wrong, that ultimately the second Justice League movie will be more akin to what Jeff Johns sees as being a Justice League movie than the first one will. I'm interested to see, however, how we get there. What the transition is, if that makes sense.
It does, and that's what I'm looking forward to, is like, how do we get from point A to point B? Like, what's going to be that in between point A and point B?
Point A to point C, and Justice League movie that is filming right now is that point B. You know, what does that look like, and what shape does that take, and can it be successful enough to continue the universe going forward?
And I think it will be. I think that. I mean, when we look at the overall box office take of Batman v Superman, sure, it didn't get to the $1 billion that Warner Brothers was anticipating or promoting it as getting to. But it's still going to be looked at financially speaking. It is still a successful movie. And I think that when it comes to the other films like Suicide Squad and Wonder Woman, which will have much lower budgets than what Batman v Superman did, I think you start to see a lot more financial success coming from both of them. Mostly because I think that both of those are going to be more aesthetically pleasing to wider audiences. I think that the filmmaking direction of both of those films seems to fit more in line with what people are wanting to see out of their I guess, superhero genre or action movie genres.
Do you expect that the first 80 minutes of Suicide Squad will be interminable, will be slow and prodding, and you want to take a nap like you did in Superman v. Batman?
Well, I
first 80 minutes. I'm not saying the whole movie. The movie's good.
I feel like I'm the middle ground between you two in that I like the movie. I didn't like it as much as Russell did, but I didn't dislike it as much as Todd did. But I'm going to disagree with that assessment. I found the first 80 minutes to be very interesting from a character standpoint, particularly as it pertained to setting up Bruce Wayne, who we had not seen in this universe. Did it have some issues with the Superman side of the character?
Yes, but I
dug the Bruce Wayne stuff. I did. I dug it. It did something for me. It did something for me in the terms of establishing this older version of Bruce and his motivations, because you can't assume that modern audiences know this incarnation of Bruce, which is really an incarnation of Bruce that we had never been introduced to before on the big screen. So I think
you could have done that in 15 minutes.
You could have done it in 15 minutes, but I don't think it would have serviced the character the way he needed to be serviced. And those are all the sexual puns I'm going to make for this evening.
Well, no, it's
to
not.
Me,
and
the thing is, though, I mean, only about a third of that first 80 minutes is Bruce Wayne stuff. Two thirds of it is Clark in Congress and in the bathtub with Lana. And just super.
Wait, Lana was in the movie? What? What did I miss?
No, I'm sorry, Lois. Sorry. Redhead Lois is Lana to me. I'm sorry.
She's Dan Jurgens is Lois.
Amy Adams is not Lois, still not Lois Lane to me. In my middle aged versions of the characters where Lois is still this Terry Hatcher to me and Erica Durance, that's Lois to me.
At least you didn't say Margot Kidder, because I would have just been like, oh, God, Todd.
No, but you know what? I saw her recently.
Or Kristen Crook?
Lana Lang from Smallville. There you go. That's the winner. That's what we all love.
Anyway, so yeah, Lois Lane in this contemporary universe is not – that's weird that I called her Lana, because that's how I see her. She's more like – she's not Lois to me. She's not strong enough a character yet. Maybe an actress's conceit and maybe the direction that they want, but it's not working. Anyway, regardless, Bruce Wayne, to me, they could have told that story in a lot more concise fashion than they did. The actual problems that I have with Superman v. Batman, I'm probably going to like that extra 30 minutes that could add to the ultimate rated R edition that we get in 2 weeks, right? Hopefully.
It's pretty close.
Fourth week of July, June. So,
oh wow,
no, okay. It's in July. It's like July.
Oh, I thought it was like June 26th.
Well, the digital release is coming out in June, and then the Blu-ray and DVD,
which
will be out
Todd will of course
July.
Be pre-ordering on his iPad Pro
as an Apple TV user. Yeah, so
which I have to admit that being in Dallas with for WrestleMania with Todd. And sharing a bed with him, one of my most exhilarating experiences was when he pulled out his large, you know, plus-sized iPad Pro and we watched The Force Awakens on it.
You see, you thought it was the final sexual reference of the podcast, and you were wrong. They're just going to keep coming.
The Force
another
was not
one.
The only thing that awakened that night.
Hey-o.
Nope. And as someone who is laying in the bed next to them, I can tell you that the Force was strong. Strong enough to rattle walls. My own bed. There was a disturbance in the Force. Garner felt it too. He was there.
When overweight guys sleep, they snore. That's just all I'm going to have to say about that.
That's right.
And it's a thing. Luckily, I can sleep through most loud noise, so I was fine. Garter, on the other hand, looked a little disheveled at times. But moving back over to the Aquaman take for this universe, I've been following James Wan as he's talked about it and as Jeff Johns has talked about their take on the movie. Of course, they're being very secretive about the story because I got a feeling a lot of that's going to actually spin directly out of Justice League since it comes after that. But it seems like, you know, Geoff Johns is pretty heavily involved, and James Wan has referenced the New 52 take on the character, including the parts that we talked about before the break, the jokes that take all the ammunition out of the gun, and how James Wan kind of wants to put that in the movie. So you guys think there's a way to present that effectively from page to screen?
Is Momoa a character, a guy that can be funny on screen? I don't know, but I mean, it's not like he's Paul Rudd. It's not like they're going to try to Ant-Man, Aquaman. But I think we're in uncharted territory. Uncharted waters.
We're in uncharted waters here.
You know, you're going to see a different take, but hopefully they'll be able to pull off a thing that's relevant both to audiences and to people who love the comics. And I just don't know. What I'm scared of, and this is just me, because I've seen lots of things happen, I'm scared that returns on Justice League, or is what's going to drop first, Wonder Woman or Justice League?
Wonder Woman.
Wonder Woman.
Yeah, returns on Justice League, because Wonder Woman will get made and Justice League will come out. I think we have – this is the end of 2017, or are they going to push it back to 2018?
Wonder Woman is in summer of 17, and then Justice League is in November of 17.
When is episode 7 dropping?
December.
I'm sorry, episode 8?
December
of 17.
Yeah, I see, just because I'm old and I've seen this movie before, so to speak, I see them pushing that back, just because
pushing
it was pushing Justice League back.
Wow. Okay.
I do. They pushed back Superman v Batman at least a year, right?
No, they moved it up, actually.
Well, originally they pushed it back from 15 to 16 and then moved
right.
it up from
right.
May 16 to March 16.
To get out of Civil War. So, yeah, I mean, the Disney juggernaut is going to have these films that are just going to keep coming and keep coming.
I think there's a full month between Episode 8 and Justice League, though. Like, you're not going to be able to move somewhere at this point that you're not going to be at least a month away from something major, you know? I think a larger concern would be that Justice League would be opening within a week or two of Thor Ragnarok at this point.
And that's another one for Marvel and Disney to kind of not necessarily worry about, but, you know, I know, Nick, you're a lot higher on The Dark World than a lot of people are.
Yes. Let me just before people read too much into that, as a longtime Thor fan, we could do this same podcast, like Todd's viewpoints on Aquaman. We could do the inverse of this podcast about Thor, and I would be doing the Todd role on this podcast, because you can't make a version of a movie that has flying freaking longboats in it and not expect me to just go like cuckoo for fucking Cocoa Puff. So, like, I cannot be impartial when it pertains to The Dark World, because it has so many – for all the stuff it gets wrong, and trust me, I know, as a movie, it gets stuff wrong. Trust me, I know that. But all the other shit it gets right, like, in terms of the Thor mythos, does me a big, big, big solid. So, I you know, that's my issue with that's my deal with The Dark World.
And where you are on that, like, I want to take this minute to illustrate this, because that's where I am with, like, Batman v Superman. Because I'm just a big super DC nerd. And seeing all this stuff on the big screen done this way is stuff that I never thought I would see. And trust me, I can point out plenty of flaws in Batman v Superman. That is there. And there, some of them are glaring. And it gets, like you said about Thor the Dark World, Batman v Superman gets plenty of things wrong. Some things that even bother me. There's a line in that movie that I'm never really going to get past, because it just bothers the hell out of me every time I hear it. And it's when Superman is about to fly to Gotham and he's looking at Lois and says, "Nobody stays good in this world." And I was like, Zack Snyder, I don't know if you really get the character of Superman whenever you put a line like that in there.
You don't owe them anything, Clark.
That does not bother me in the least.
That bothers me, Russell.
I don't care, Todd. But that to me was not the bridge too far. It was the moment when Superman says, "Nobody stays good in this world." I'm like, no, you do. That's the point of your character. And that's what I've I've always kind of endeared myself to Superman 4 was that he did. And that, not that he wouldn't be pushed or not that he wouldn't, like, cross a line every once in a while, but that, you know, there was still that that righteousness there, and it seemed like it was, like, cut out at that point. And, yeah, that part irks me. So that's my one major quibble. But I mean, there are little things that you can quibble about for days and days. But
I think what we were getting at was that I have a hard time seeing them moving just to get away from, you know, a month, you know, a Star Wars movie that's a month away and a Thor movie that's 2 to 3 weeks away.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't see a giant move happening there for Justice League because, I mean, where else are they going to go? I mean, they're going to push it back to March of 2018 because I think that would be, that would also involve them having to shuffle not just Justice League, but The Flash.
Flash, Aquaman, and, you know, yeah, into your next series of films.
Has there been a huge opening superhero movie in the fall?
Not necessarily.
Star Wars was massive, and it was you know,
but that was in December. You know, that's
it was
during,
like, the
a school holiday,
Lord of the Rings, right? Yeah, it was like the Hobbit and Lord of the Rings slot.
I don't know that there's been a huge opening one in the fall. When did Dark World open? Did Dark World open have a November opening? I can't remember.
November 8th of 2013.
I thought that was accurate. Yes.
So
I was about to make reference to the fact that I'm pretty sure that one came out.
Wow.
It didn't open super huge, but it did Marvel money, which is pretty damn decent money. And also, you got to remember, while they're not superhero films, the Bond films almost always traditionally open in November.
Yep.
And I can't remember the last Bond film that's been considered a quote-unquote flop opening weekend. Those movies make money. My thing at this point is I think you're in a day and age where outside of opening in maybe January or February, which is just a dead land – you know, a wasteland in terms of film releases. I think if you open any time between March and December, we're in an era where you can make money. Like, I think the timing of the release now is probably more irrelevant than it's ever been, in my opinion, especially since the success of Force Awakens last December.
I'm going to agree with that. I think that release date at this point has become virtually irrelevant, especially when it comes to these big tentpole films. If it's Star Wars or if it's a superhero movie, people are going to go see it.
Yeah, if it's big enough, it's going to be in every theater, and you can see it if you want.
You got to consider the most sought after date in all of superhero movies now is always what, the Friday
Memorial
before Free Comic Book Day, right?
Yep.
And so that's a day that happens either late April or early May, where most schools are not out for the year yet. So it's not quite into summer, so you don't get that quote-unquote school vacation bump. So what really, from a practical standpoint, is the difference between that Friday and a Friday in November?
And that's a really good question. I don't think there really is much. The next Free Comic Book Day is going to be Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2,
yep,
like, coming out that weekend, because it kind of seems like Disney has gotten a monopoly on that weekend, because Wonder Woman comes out June 2nd of that year. So
like a month later.
Yeah, it's like Guardians of the Galaxy gets a month to do its business, which – it's gonna open huge. It's gonna mostly make its money, but I think that most of these comic book movies, most big tentpole or blockbuster films, they're gonna make what they're gonna make. They're gonna make the majority of their money within those first 4 weeks, and then after that, it's like, okay, well, you expect a large drop off as the next movies are coming out, and you'll just, you know, you get what you get after that. It probably doesn't make all that much difference to open within a month of each other at this point. You can totally do that and expect to make the exact same amount of money that you were going to make in the first place. It probably changes very little.
If they have to move it at all, though, I think they're better served bumping it to the next spring. I mean, it's better that than moving it back 2 weeks or so. Because
I would go the opposite. I would say if they're going to move it into October where you have no competition.
I would do the same. I would say either September or October for Justice League rather than trying to move it back, because moving it back means you're not just moving Justice League, you're moving Flash and Aquaman.
All your slate.
That gets a lot more problematic.
That just passes the buck in terms of the issue that we are talking about. if it's Justice League competing with Thor and you move Justice League to March, then that means you're moving Flash into April or May, which means it's bumping up against what's coming out in May of 18. I've already that'd be Infinity War, and you don't want I'll admit this, DC don't want no part of that Infinity War.
No, they battle. Don't.
Nope. And then,
are you guys confident that every movie post Justice League will be made?
Well, with the exception of Green Lantern Corps, yes.
Fairly. I would actually say I'm more confident in Green Lantern Corps getting made than Cyborg.
I forgot about Cyborg.
The reason being that I feel like Cyborg is one of those that they initially announced because they thought, hey, let's give every member of our Justice League team a solo film. But then they started reassessing things, I think probably before Batman v Superman ever came out. They were like, you know, that seems like a good idea, and we're not saying that we don't want Cyborg to be featured prominently, but maybe we should start thinking about another avenue for him. And there's talk that Ray Fisher is going to wind up showing up in The Flash as kind of a side character for that film series. So they may try to build him a little bit more there to see what kind of interest they're getting and decide whether or not Cyborg is going solo or if he's getting that Teen Titans movie or that Titans movie that's been bandied about.
That would be the way to go. I think there's something really cool to the idea of having Cyborg be the one connecting link between the Titans and the Justice League. I think that's a cool idea that you can play with, because as much as they've tried to make Cyborg feel like one of the big seven, quote unquote, he still just kind of has that feel of me of not really fitting in. I feel like he fits better with the Titans, and so I like the idea of the Titans being able to have that one liaison almost to the league, you know, if that makes any sense.
It does. I would agree with that assessment. I think that he would be a really good link between those two teams, and it would serve their overall franchises a lot more, I think, having him be that. Because he would be that character that we're seeing through his eyes, that we're getting his experiences. Make him the everyman character that Geoff Johns tried to make him into in Justice League.
I'm skeptical that they'll ever make a Titans property. They had the TBS show and they pulled the plug on that. And, you know, if Cyborg, I'd rather see a Titans movie than a Cyborg movie, but they'll probably do a Nightwing before they would do a Titans to me. They have to have that hook before that. So,
well, that begs the question of what's going to be in the Batman solo movie.
Right.
Because all of that is, you know, they're going to be very secretive about that. There's no way we're going to find out everything up front. But I'm pretty confident in that property being made, since they've already kind of put the investment down on that one. So,
well, guys, if you pay attention to all of the rumors and speculation, you'll know that we're getting, you know, a Harley Quinn versus the Birds of Prey movie, a Captain Boomerang movie, a Joker movie, and a Suicide Squad sequel, all within the next few years. So prepare for that.
You know,
DC is thinking of their Suicide movie as their Guardians of the Galaxy.
In a way.
And you know, this is going to be an interesting thing, because it's not on the roadmap of big DC movies. But if it does big business, it can be. And they only have so many. I mean, I would love to see them get to the point where they could put a quarterly superhero movie out like Marvel is going to be doing in 2 years.
Well, that is currently their plan, though. They are going to a 3-movie-a-year structure.
Yep. Wow. And that's ambitious. But at the same time, I look at the schedule of films that Marvel had at the beginning whenever they did Iron Man. Like, the time between Iron Man to the first Avengers movie was only 4 years. And that same amount of time is passing between Man of Steel and Justice League. So they're doing it in one fewer movies. There's only one fewer movie between the DCEU and the MCU. Like, MCU had two Iron Man movies, whereas we should have had two actual Superman movies rather than just
this was not a Superman movie.
Yeah, it felt more like a Batman film. To me, anyway. It was a Batman movie that also featured Superman. And the...
Well, and Avengers, we had... It wasn't just two heroes that had solo movies, too, though. We'd had Iron Man, Hulk, Thor, Cap had all had solo movies before Avengers, right?
They had, and I got to admit, and I think most people have to admit this, though, about the first Avenger, is that we all knew where that was going, and it really did feel like marking time until Avengers. It felt like an in-between movie. And the part that mattered happened in the post-credits. The thing about Iron Man was, I don't dislike the sequel. I think that the sequel is actually pretty good, but I don't know.
I'm not counting Iron Man 2. I'm saying they had four heroes have solo movies before Justice League.
Yeah.
Before Avengers. Before. And here you're going to have Man of Steel and Batman v Superman and then Justice League. So you've only done so much building up for it.
Well, you got Wonder Woman in there, too. We don't know what all that's going to do.
Wonder Woman is hitting before Justice League.
Yeah, that's true. Wonder Woman is technically – it feels like they're being made simultaneously, but we will have Wonder Woman next summer.
Yep. You'll have Wonder Woman several months before Justice League comes out. And, yeah, it's a busy schedule, though, because Gal Gadot had to turn right around. Like, just as soon as she finished filming Wonder Woman, she had to, like, fly to London and get on set for Justice League.
So, it feels like if you're signed on for a DCU movie, they own you.
Pretty much.
For the next couple of years, that's pretty much how it's going
to be. That's your life. You don't really have much time to do anything else, unless you're Ben Affleck and you still find a way to get all your movies coming out. But that actually works out pretty well for Jason Momoa, because I can't think of anything else that he's really doing at the time. And he's one of those guys that, like we mentioned before, he is totally invested in being Aquaman. I was wondering how that was going to play out. Like, if he was, just taking it for the paycheck and saying, "Oh, well, cool, I get to play a superhero and whatever," and that's the last we hear of it until we see the movie. But he's really like taking that character and just running with it. He seems to genuinely love the character, and that makes me feel pretty confident about his ability to play the character. What's that doing for you guys?
Yeah, well, is it Aquaman, or is it what the Warner Brothers head honchos want to be Aquaman?
The difference being what in your eyes?
Like I said earlier, it's just Aquaman, and to me, is a postmodern character at this point. It encapsulates all these things from his appearance in the Golden Age all the way to now. And to me, the again, we don't know because it's been 90 seconds. How much time was he in the actual Superman v Batman movie?
This is like 30 seconds tops.
Yeah.
If that.
Yeah. So, okay. This is a gross speculation by me, but it just feels like they're trying to put out their vision versus taking what has been part of the comics for years and years and just saying, this is, It just doesn't seem congruent necessarily. But I don't know. I mean, I'm just speculating because we haven't seen it yet.
And Nick, yours, your view on that?
I'm gonna withhold judgment is the best way I can put it. I will agree that I think the general look of the character that we've seen is something that is not akin to the comics, but we always get reinterpretations. I mean, the look of Heath Ledger was not a look that we had seen as it pertained to the Joker.
He wore no purple or no green hair.
Right. And so I'm going to wait.
Well, yeah, well, he had purple suit and green hair.
Sure. But, the scars, the makeup, that whole deal. I mean, you can look at it a lot of different ways, but I'm going to say that I'm going to wait and see, because we don't really know outside of 20 seconds of very murky footage
YouTube
in Batman
footage.
Versus Superman. We don't know what their take on the character is. And plus, we have to remember that – so one thing Warner Brothers has said all along is that their approach is they're going to let filmmakers make films. And so whatever Zack Snyder's usage of the character is going to be doesn't necessarily mean – that's what James Wan wants to do with the solo movie. So I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt for now. And once I see Justice League, that benefit of the doubt may be rescinded. That's certainly within the realm of possibility. But I've seen enough at this – or I haven't seen enough at this point, rather, to make any judgments one way or another.
And that's kind of where I'm going to fall is we've not really gotten enough information about Aquaman or of what he's going to be for this film universe to say one way or the another. As far as the look and the ideas that have been presented so far, it is very different. And seeing it like that whenever I've been used to like the Jeff Johns, Jeff Parker takes on the character, who's like, you know, blonde hair, blue eye, very clean cut, to seeing a guy that I had just watched on Game of Thrones. Yeah, it was jarring at first, but then I'm like, okay, well, if you're reinterpreting the character, not unlike how like the Earth One line at DC reinterprets the characters from time to time, you know, yeah, show me something different. And if it's good, it's good. If it's not, well, then I guess that won't be sticking with me, and it'll be a point of contention I have there. But we will see how it shakes out, and it's all coming soon enough. I'm pretty confident, actually, that if Jeff Johns is as involved in the production side of these movies going forward as he seems to be at this point, that it will at least somewhat resemble what we've come to know and love, and there will be elements in there that all of us, like, be we new or older fans, can find something to like. And with that, I want to move into the final point of the podcast before we close it out, and ask you guys, who deserves the most winning points for where Aquaman is right now, that being in terms of where he is as a comic book character and how and where he is going into this upcoming film universe, that he has become this character who is so much more out front now than he has been in the last, like, probably couple of decades. Who do you guys think deserves the real credit for that? Todd?
We all have the same answer, Russ.
Jeff Johns.
Jeff Johns.
There it is, and make it three. The guy just – he brought the character back from absolute – like almost obscurity. Like the Aquaman was headed in that direction, and Jeff Johns pulled him – from the deep and and made him into something that has become is endured to all of us who are currently reading comics.
And to me, it really started in Brightest Day. I mean, we give a lot of praise to Aquaman number one post New 52, but Brightest Day is an Aquaman and Firestorm story to me. There are other characters too, but to me, those are the most important things. The most relevant things are the Aquaman tales in those. And that's where this felt, you know, it was Aquaman and Mera in Brightest Day. And I wish I could find the omnibus at a reasonable price. One of these days I'll get it.
It was $46 on Amazon last I looked. That wasn't
I bad. Know. That's not bad. I've spent more than that. I just got Sinestro Corps War for $70, and I was really happy about that. I know.
That's a hefty price.
I know.
70 for what?
Sinestro Corps War Absolute.
Oh, man.
Hefty price. Worth it, but hefty.
Yeah, I know. I don't like spending more than 50 on anything.
All right. You guys got any final points you want to add about Aquaman and his presumptive future?
I'm just scared that they're not going to get there. I have been burned so many times as a DC guy. And, you know, they reboot the universe every couple years, it seems. And that's an oversimplification, but I feel like Charlie Brown in the football, it's going to be pulled away. And we won't get this Aquaman movie. But, God, I hope we do, and I hope it's not terrible. And even if it's terrible, we still got an Aquaman movie, you know?
Yeah. Nick, final point.
You know, I'm just interested to see where the character goes from here, you know, both in terms of what Momoa and Juan can bring to the table on the big screen, and also, you know, where Dan Amnett's going to take it in the comics, and eventually, you know, what hasn't been talked about nearly enough is Jeff Johns coming back and doing Rise of the Seven Seas, which
that'll be great.
Before, you know, other besides what we're all assuming is him writing, you know, the Watchmen rebirth follow up, whatever form that takes. We would all, I guess we're guessing that Rise of the Seven Seas comes before that. So that'll be a great reminder of who Jeff Johns is and what he's capable of before we get that big Watchmen blow off.
And DC Cinematic, what is Unite the Seven? Is that the Seven Heroes or the Seven Seas? What do you think that is?
I'm assuming Seven Seas, because from what we've been told involving Justice League, it's only going to be at least from Justice League 1, it's only going to be Flash, Wonder Woman, Batman, Superman, Aquaman, Cyborg. From what Charles Roven, the producer of Batman v Superman, said, Green Lantern was not currently in the plans for Justice League Part 1. Now, granted, Charles Roven is being transitioned into another role, according to reports, but I have a hard time believing that just because they're having producers change that suddenly Green Lantern is going to become a bigger factor in that story.
Yeah, not yet.
I don't know. Yeah, it's tough. It's like they have Shellshock, Green Lantern, Shellshock, but to me, he's more of a Justice Leaguer than Aquaman, even though technically speaking, from 19 whatever the Brave and the Bold issue, Aquaman and Green Lantern were both there. I mean, you should have both of them in the original Justice League, but I think DC Cinematic Universe is not going to have Green Lantern anytime soon, unfortunately.
I'm still holding out hope that we get New Frontier on that one, and that Hal Jordan somehow shows up, and we're getting his origin story in Justice League. That would make me insanely happy.
Back like a backdoor pilot.
Yes. It ends with Hal Jordan becoming Green Lantern, which would be my fanboy fantasy for Justice League Part 1.
All right, dream casting. You can't cast Chris Pine. Who's going to be Hal Jordan?
Dream casting would be Jensen Ackles from Supernatural.
Man, you took Chris Pine off the table, so give me a second.
Well, no, Steve Trevor took Chris Pine off the table.
Well, I understand what you're saying, asshole. Let me think. God, I'm having a tough
spot. I'm sorry,
having a tough time with this one.
It's a tough casting choice once you've taken Chris Pine off the table. I mean, I knew mine, but that was – God, that's tough.
Yeah, because you got to think, like, you can't cast somebody who's older than 35, in my opinion. You have to be – it has to be somebody who can be there at least 15 years.
Unless, you know, I've heard rumors that if they go with the multiple Earth Lanterns in Green Lantern Corps, they would almost cast Hal as the Bruce Wayne of this piece. In terms of the same way Affleck was used as the elder statesman in Batman v Superman, that Hal would kind of be used that way. And if that's the case, you know, you could do that. But I don't know if that's necessarily, you know, the way they're going to
– I mean, if you have a JLA and it's only one guy is over 40 and everybody else is like 27, 28, that doesn't make sense. So,
you know, I can honestly see – and I know he was rumored before and a lot of people hated on it. But I think Bradley Cooper could do a pretty good Hal, honestly.
I remember you hating on that back in the day whenever I suggested it.
but to be fair, Bradley Cooper's done a lot more since then and has expanded his portfolio, shall we say.
And his unfortunate bitch face has suddenly softened on you. That was a comment that I will never forget.
Possibly. I'll put it this way, and I'll stand by this, and you can call me out in 5 years if you want to. Anybody but Channing.
Oh, there's a Twitter conversation. If you guys haven't followed that one, we had a pretty epic thread going about Channing Tatum joining the DC
as
EU.
Our good friend the Iron Sheik might say. Fuck him.
And we've officially come full circle on this one. It was fun having you guys on. I love talking Aquaman and Green Lantern with you guys because it's always entertaining. I'm gonna leave it there because
I'm disappointed in you guys because I got a lot drunker than both of you did.
I'm not disappointed in that at all because I love Drunk Todd.
I'm trying to keep it under control right now. I'm doing a pretty good job.
Drunk Todd is so much more fun than drunk me. So we're going to leave that as the comic relief and entertainment side of this podcast. And you know what? If you guys want to hear more of these crazy conversations, you can join us on the Place to Be Nation Comics Facebook group. It is open. It's open to all comers. So just come on down. You know,
request. You have to request to join the group. And if you're a spammer, I'm going to shut you down, Bubba.
Yep. Todd is quick with the block button, and don't tempt him because he'll use it. You will be sent back down to the depths of to Davy Jones' locker, if you will. Have we made all the ship and fish puns that we can possibly get into this? I think we have. I think we've hit all the high points. I hope. But if we haven't, you know, come on. You know,
it's unfathomable.
There it is.
Puns we've done.
And And with that, for Nick Duke of the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Todd Weber of Conversation Comics, or Weber Has Issues, we're going to figure out the name for his podcast eventually.
Conversation colon comics.
Emphasis on the colon.
Colon.
I'm Russell Sellers. We'll see you guys next time on Sellers Points Podcast. You guys have a great day.
The currents will shift. Glide me towards you. No, something's left. And we're all alive.